Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome aboard for this final program of this month of February. It should be March 1st, except it's not. It's February the 29th, so God only knows what could happen today. Leap year days are strange animals. But I have a feeling we'll get through 3 hours of scintillating conversation radio in the next 3 hours. Funny how that works. So stick around. Coming up, our conversation with MakeThemAccountable.com's Carolyn Kay. I believe she's dialing in now, even as we speak. Our weekly conversation that I've come to enjoy very, very much. Sort of a roundup of the week's events. As we say here, cussing and discussing. It's something I really do enjoy. So sit back, relax. It's Friday night. If you're home from work, get a cold, refreshing something or another. And if you're not home from work on the West Coast yet, then, well, you know, not till you get home. And if it's already Saturday, like it is for John Fox, well, what have you been waiting for? On the line with us now, from MakeThemAccountable.com, Carolyn K. Caro.
Hey.
I'm so glad you could join us.
Yes, well, I'm glad, too.
We're back on track now. This is two Fridays in a row, so that makes me feel much better.
Yes. It needs to be a habit.
Are you still freezing up there? You covered up in snow? I know.
Well, actually, it has gotten warmer, just a little bit warmer. It snowed again last night. We've had more snow this year than in all of the 15, 16 years we've been up here. We have not had this much snow, and we have not had this much cold weather, really cold weather, like 10, 2, minus 3.
Oh, yeah, the don't leave the brass monkeys out weather, sure.
You know, I moved up here from Louisiana.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I was born and raised in Louisiana, lived most of my life there until I moved up here. And then when I first saw one of the temperature things outside of a business, it had a plus on it.
Yeah, who knew?
So I said, wait a minute, if it can be plus, it can also be minus.
Well, precisely. I had a dear friend.
Where did that go?
Had a dear friend once here who lived in the mountains, and he said he was so sick of cold weather that his plan for finding out when he had moved far south enough was that he was going to get a snowmobile and put it on a trailer behind his truck and start driving south, and he'd know he was home when he got somewhere that they looked at it and said, "What's that?"
He'd be in the right place.
But coming from St. Charles, it was St. Charles, wasn't it?
Lake Charles. Louisiana.
Coming from Lake Charles.
Right there on I-10.
You probably didn't even see snow, did you?
It had snowed maybe 3 or 4 times in my whole life.
So when you first got up there, it was, oh, look, it's snowing, how charming. That got old real quick, didn't it?
Well, you know, I never was that much like that, but Walt, my guy, he loves it. He thinks snow is so wonderful, so pretty, and all of that, and I look out the window at it, and I say, uh-huh, and he says, don't you want to go for a walk? I say, uh-uh.
No, that's why it's frozen. That's God's way of telling us to stay the heck inside.
Look at it from the window. It's so pretty.
Exactly. Well, it's been a busy week in the press. It's been a busy week in the weird little world of politics.
Yes.
Where do you want to start this evening? Anything particularly setting you on fire?
Well, just that. Let's see. Many things that have gone on in terms of the media finally starting to attack Obama, or at least the right-wing media finally are getting in gear on the kinds of things that they're going to try to throw at him, because until now, I think Hillary Clinton in a lot of people's minds was the presumptive candidate. And so they really weren't bothering with him very much. But I have to say, you know, it's been like a steamroller. Boom, boom, boom. I mean, you know, I'm above, I'm the top, I'm better, I'm this, I'm that. It is, you know, poor Hillary can barely get a word in edgewise. And, a lot of people seem to like that. They seem to think, oh, yeah, well, that's great. That's the guy I'm going with, the guy everybody else is going with. That's what I'm doing.
Well, did you see the bit that Samantha Bee did on The Daily Show? from deep inside the Paula Jones Hillary Clinton Media Center.
The Paula Jones Media Center, the anti-Hillary war room.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And we've had a couple of things. There was a satire piece from The Onion that we ran during Guy James's show yesterday. Some of the satire is approaching truth.
Yes.
And I guess that's why it's funny, because you sit there and you go, yeah. But, well, Samantha Bee had that line. No, she's not paranoid. We really are out to get her.
Right. And, of course, they are. I mean, when you read things like there was a letter to the editor, let me see if I can find it, on in the New York Times recently.
Oh, the one about Maureen Dowd's column?
Yeah, where the letter writer described the words that were used, yeah. Ms. Dowd says Hillary Rodham Clinton is lame for accusing journalists of treating her campaign differently from Barack Obama's, and applauds the open-mindedness of the press in its treatment of Senator Clinton. Here are the words she uses in association with Senator Clinton. Desperate, primal scream, clanging, churlish, discombobulated, gloomy, flipping, begrudging, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then, for Senator Obama, golden child, sunny, consistency, bedazzling, confidence, excitement.
See, that's one of the things.
There's no difference between the way they're treated.
Well, Maureen Dowd, as Bartkoff has noted on a number of occasions, is the dragon lady. And he notes she hates everybody. But she especially hates Hillary Clinton. And Al Gore. She hated him real good, too.
She hated Al Gore. She liked George Bush for a while, if you'll remember.
Sometimes I think there's a little bit of something that, if it was happening on the stock market on Wall Street, Caro, we would call insider trading. Because Maureen Dowd, I believe, knew full well that she would have a lot more fodder for her poison pen with 8 years of George Bush than she ever would have with 8 years of Al Gore.
Well, I think they were all like that. I really do. I really think they thought, oh boy, this guy's a real moron.
I mean, for instance, the Flush Flimball munches up a handful of OxyContin every night and falls on his knees and begs God to please, please let a Democrat win the White House, so he'll be comfortable, just doing his hate job. Because as he noted after the 2006 congressional elections, he was sick and tired, my friends, of carrying water for Republicans who don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if there's not a little bit of that at work here. Because, I mean, what are the Republicans going to do, Caro? They've got an industry,
well,
a full cottage industry, 16 years old, that they built solely for the purpose of destroying Hillary Clinton. And it looks like there's a strong chance that she'll be out of the running before they get to really fire the thing up and get it banging on all eight.
Well, here's what I think is going on. Because, you know, every time that we have ever seen situations where the polls say one thing and then suddenly there's this surge of voters doing something that goes against what the polls said, like, first of all, take Iowa. The poll said Clinton was going to win. Then there's all this stuff going on, this crazy stuff going on with the caucuses, and Obama wins, okay? Then Obama is projected to win New Hampshire. And then this sudden surge of older white women who love Hillary come along and, you know, and get in there, and Hillary gets the nomination. I mean, gets the nod for New Hampshire. And then all of this stuff of more and more caucuses where, you know, strange things are going. The only times in my lifetime that I've ever seen strangeness like that is when Karl Rove has been involved in an election. Okay.
And yeah, I don't think he's just sitting back and resting on his laurels, do you?
Now, let me tell you why. Now, you can tell me that I'm ready for Tin Hat territory. Go right ahead, because I'm still going to think this. Karl Rove has got to keep his butt out of jail.
Yes, he does.
He's got to keep George W. Bush's butt out of jail.
That was part and parcel of the media shutdown in Alabama last Sunday night.
You bet. And I am convinced that they think Obama is easier to beat. And that's why they haven't had, you know, all the attacks on Hillary and not so much on Obama. Now, a lot of the natives apparently are getting restless and you know, wanting to attack Obama. So now they're finally starting to do it. You know, the World Nut Daily now has an article every day. And they do this, you know, progressives out there who think you voted for Obama or are going to vote for Obama because all of the discord is going to go away in this country, please.
I may vote for Obama in West Virginia's primary in May, but it won't be because I think the Republicans will play nicey with him.
Exactly.
I'm not under that illusion, not even a tiny bit.
If you think he's the better candidate, go right ahead, but don't do it because you think the right wing can't touch him. Remember how everybody was so tired of all the Clinton divisiveness by the time Al Gore decided to run for president in 2000 or 1999, and they said, oh, thank God, this guy's a Boy Scout. There's nothing they can do to him. They can't touch him.
No, they...
So what did they do? They made a serial liar out of Mr. Boy Scout. Then
and just as they made a craven coward out of a proven hero in John Kerry.
Exactly. They always go after the person's strongest point, okay? So, you know, here they are with, you know, facing the possible nomination of Barack Obama. And, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people think, well, they'd never dare go after his color. They wouldn't dare do that.
Oh, yes, they will. And they'll go after made-up crap, too.
Made-up crap.
I don't know if you noticed, but they put the Republican National Committee put out a press release yesterday that said, we repudiate the constant use of Barack Hussein Obama's middle name. We respect Barack Hussein Obama. Barack Hussein Obama is a fine man, and we won't be calling Barack Hussein Obama Barack Hussein Obama anymore, because that's a slur on Barack Hussein Obama, because there's nothing wrong with the name Hussein for a middle name for Barack Hussein Obama.
And we didn't mean it.
But you know what that is? You know what that is, Carol? That is a barometer. That is the Republican National Committee acknowledging, sort of by indirect fire, that the blood libel and the religion slander against Obama has gotten full traction now among its knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful.
And people, and again, if people think that they won't have an impact, they are so wrong. I have been saying it for 8 years now. And one of my notes recently, when people were saying Hillary Clinton this, Hillary Clinton that, I said, the fault, dear Democrats, is not in our candidates. The fault is in our refusal to recognize who our real enemy is, and that is the right wing. They will make a vicious terrorist out of anybody.
And they've made fools out of the so-called hard left too, because the hard left picked up their talking points on Hillary and ran with them like a fish with its hook with a hook
I
in its mouth.
I can't tell you how sad that makes me, because
look, I've got people, Caro, I've got people who listen to this program who cannot type the letters Hillary. This is a progressive radio network. This is a liberal radio network. And I got people who type Hitlery, and it drives me just crazy.
Yeah. Yes, it does me too. And we're talking people who have been friends of mine for a very long time now, internet friends, you know. Some of the people that fought with me in the trenches in 2000, before these big blogs came along, when Marcus was, you know, still being given a bottle, when, you know, I mean, not quite that long before, but
weren't exactly dry behind the ears. Yeah, I get it.
Long before any of the blogs came along, we were in the trenches on the message boards of 2000, and we were battling the Bush bots. And they did, the way they pushed and shoved and refused to engage in any kind of discussion really reminds me a lot of many of the Obama supporters that I've seen on Democratic Underground, on Daily Coast, and some of the other progressive websites and in my email. I'm speechless.
And see, that was the next question I was going to put to you, Caro. When are we going to realize that the enemy is John McCain, and that the person to be attacked is John McCain, and that the person to be stopped is John McCain?
When the Obama supporters have gotten their way. In fact, that's what I asked one of them after he sent some particularly nasty something or other. You know, I said, well, when does the unity part start? And he says, when you come in line. But, well, golly, that's not my idea of democracy.
No, and this is, well...
And that was Bush's kind of bipartisanship, too, if you'll remember.
You mean you're either with me
or... your opponent.
Yeah.
It just... I'm very sad to see this in my party and in...
And this is not you and me coming from some Pollyanna place, Caro. We're both grown ups here. We understand that it's a bare knuckled business. But the fact of the matter is, and I'm not one of those people who says that one side is blameless and the other is not. The squabble. Let's see, what is today's squabble? Today's squabble is that Hillary put out an ad saying, you want to know, or it matters who answers the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. And Obama came out and said, yeah. What matters is getting it right when the call comes at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Uh huh.
So, you know, the battling Bickersons, here we are. It's what we, you know, either this thing ends in a couple of weeks or we have to just hunker down and realize that a brokered convention means a McCain presidency.
I don't know that a brokered convention means that, and I don't know that this kind of that battling for a nomination is bad for a party. I don't know that I think that.
Oh, I don't either. I don't favor coronations. If I was into coronations during the primary process, I'd be a repiglickin'.
Yeah, right. And if you wanted to march in lockstep with everybody else in your party, yeah, you'd be a Republican, yeah. But I don't quibble with the kinds of things where I'm more experienced, I have better judgment, which is really questionable. But anyway, that kind of going back and forth. But there are a lot of folks very, very concerned that some of the really nasty stuff that has come out about the Clintons, if not from Karl Rove, then from this Chicago-oriented, political campaign going on here. And politics ain't beanbag in Chicago, okay? And that kind of stuff, I
you know, the thing that just drove me crazy and really astonished me was the hyper-willingness, not just the willingness, Caro, but the hyper-willingness of the so-called professional media to run off, and a whole bunch of bloggers, too, to run off and take as gospel the not even directly stated premise that Drudge put forward, that it was the Clinton campaign that put out, that started circulating the picture of Obama in the Somali garb.
Now, bear in mind that Drudge never said it came from he came to him from...
Right, that's what I'm saying. He didn't even say it directly.
And but immediately, Buzz Flash of all people, and you know, Mark Carlin of Buzz Flash has been a he's one of the people that I fought in the trenches with, you know, and yet they are just so ready to jump on Clinton for anything.
But as Bart Kopp has noted, Caro, there's big money to be had in it,
and you know, that's as sad as it may be, that may be what's going on.
I don't know
well,
where it comes from, but there
is an unpopular route apparently.
Well, I'm taking the route of look at the issues, examine the facts, and vote for the person you think will do the best job, A, as President of the United States of America, and or not even A and B, but sort of parallel lines, who can be a great president and fight back against the SOBs. Pardon?
You are ready for your tin hat then.
Yeah, because I supported my preferred candidates as long as my preferred candidates were allowed to remain in the race.
Yeah, there was that too. My original favorite was Edwards.
Actually,
I love everything that Dennis Kucinich says. I love everything the man says. And you know, if anybody were ever to consider taking him seriously, I would have thrown my support to him, but.
Well, the fact that he was not allowed traction, and it's not a matter of couldn't get, not allowed, okay? I mean, let's just look at how the media treated him.
Pretty much the same thing happened to Edwards, because that was...
But you see, the same thing is now happening to Hillary.
And then, of the two candidates remaining, Clinton and Obama, they're both pro-corporate. They're both, you know, too ready to support the military-industrial complex, much as Obama likes to paint himself as the anti-war candidate. He's not really anti-war. His voting record on war matters is the same as Clinton's ever since he's been in the Senate. So, and then, you know, as far as his position on the Iraq authorization, he's made very conflicting statements about that, what he would have done and so on. So,
well, let's, if you don't mind, let's take a couple of minutes here, Caro. I want you to hear, if you haven't already, and we played it, like I said, yesterday when I was filling in for Guy James. I don't know if everybody here has heard it or not, but this is a parody piece from The Onion.
Okay.
And it's precious. And I think you'll find it telling.
Moving on. If you planned on following the presidential election in November, you might want to plug your ears. A big election spoiler is coming up. A minor software glitch at the Diebold Corporation today caused thousands of electronic voting machines to accidentally release the results of the 2008 presidential election months ahead of schedule. According to the group of military and corporate leaders that has chosen every American president since Eisenhower, Diebold's mistake marks the first time the nation's leader has been revealed prematurely.
I don't even know if I can enjoy the sham election now that I know who's going to win.
If you can't trust your shadowy overlords to keep a secret, what is the purpose, really, of voting in a puppet democracy?
I'm fine with it. I mean, he was going to get my meaningless vote anyway. So.
Despite the leak, all of the presidential candidates have so far said they'll continue their campaigns.
Hillary Clinton isn't about to give up just because she lost the election. She'll give up when she's supposed to, on Election Day. And she'll act surprised.
Joining us now to talk about the leaked results is Diebold PR spokesman Ernie Kenilworth. Mr. Kenilworth, this was quite a mistake.
And we at Diebold would like to formally apologize to all of our shadowy puppet masters. This will not happen again. Please have mercy on us.
Do you think that people will still even vote in this election?
We certainly hope they will. This country is based on the fantasy that the government is the voice of the people. Going through the motions of voting and keeping the kingmaker's dealing secret is central to our culture.
Why do we need electronic voting machines in the first place? They're just not as reliable as our cloaked masters, no matter how good the software gets.
Well, I understand people's concerns, but from now on, we at Diebold will see to it that we properly safeguard the illusion of democracy for all Americans.
Well, let's hope so. So, for those of us who will watch, what can we expect on election night?
Oh, the same great show that you have always seen. We will be pretending to count votes, and we will be running an ongoing total throughout the night.
But wouldn't it be possible for them to just choose a different president so that we'll still have that same great surprise?
No, I don't think so. However, that does not rule out the possibility for a staged assassination after the president has been placed in office.
Oh, I take it that's a hint.
You won't get anything else out of me today, Gina. I've already said too much.
All right. Well, thank you for being with us, Mr. Kenilworth. After the break, researchers say they have found a cure for awakeness.
Art imitating life?
It's too close to truth.
And of course, there's a lot of visual in there, Caro. So I'll go ahead and give it away. That when they show the screen that shows the winner, it says McCain 48%. It's almost like they know what's going on because, of course, that sad, tired old freak Ralph Nader has decided to throw his hat into the ring and nominated himself a vice presidential running mate yesterday, Matt Gonzalez, I guess, from San Francisco. And, you know, maybe it won't matter, but I said earlier, and I got in a little bit of trouble with some listeners for it, for saying that, you know, I get that sinking feeling you get right at the top of the roller coaster when everything wants to come up.
Well, now, see, I don't have that same feeling. I don't think he really has a chance to do anything toward disrupting the election, not after everybody got it, so you know, after 2000, which was really, really bad. But the one thing that everybody has to understand is that the only financial support Ralph Nader has is from Republicans. It's Republicans who keep him running, so that because they realize that he tends to take votes more away from Democrats than from anybody else. And maybe a few other people contribute to his campaign, but it's mostly Republicans.
We sure do need Ron Paul to back off that previous statement that he wouldn't run a third party campaign.
Or Bloomberg. You know, I'd really like to see more people in the race, more credible people, but I'd like to see people with real support, not people who are you know, pushed into the race as spoilers like Ralph Nader.
Personality cultists.
But I'd like to see real competition in the race. And in fact, I may end up starting to work with some people on a third party. I'm just sick of this. I thought maybe the best thing to do would be to take over the Democratic Party, but the entrenched forces are so powerful, and you have to have money to beat those forces unless you can get real conviction involved and say, how does American Progressive Party sound?
Yeah, but Caro, the Constitution isn't set up for one.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, I mean the way our Constitution constitutes our government does not admit of third parties.
I don't see that.
When it was originally written, whoever won the presidency got to be president, and whoever came in second got to be vice president. That didn't work out so well after Aaron Burr, so they had to amend the Constitution to create basically running mates. But we don't have a parliamentary form of government inside the House or the Senate where you put together coalitions and that kind
of
thing.
There's no reason why we couldn't have. I mean, we don't elect the people in Congress don't elect the president the way it's done in a parliamentary system. But the president is it's in the Congress where most of the stuff gets done. Okay, suppose that we were able to convince the real progressives in Congress, like
Bernie Sanders,
Feingold, some people like that, to caucus with to create a third party, caucus with the Democrats as long as they behave, you know, as long as they really truly do things like repudiate war and do things for ordinary people instead of sucking all the money out of middle class and even poor people and putting it in the pockets of rich people. It can't keep going like that. We're becoming a third world country.
We are indeed, and I have talked to, if there's any place on God's little planet, or at least in the United States, that's ripe for a third party, it's probably here in West Virginia, because everyone is in the pocket of big coal, and big coal is our big problem.
Yeah.
And I've talked to people about that, and I've said, you know, listen, as you talk about things like a viable third party, please understand that, you know, no building goes up from the apex down. It's all built from the base. So, you know, if a third party is the genuine desire of progressives in America, that question is not answered by the likes of Ralph Nader. The building of a third party happens with members of county commissions, with aldermen and selectmen, with the sanitation commissioners, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, move it and move upward from there into state legislatures, governor's offices. The fascination with a third party from a presidential standpoint just strikes me as something that is not going to happen in our lifetime.
No, right. I think you're right about that. But then again, who would have thought that the Republicans created, what, in the 1840s? Who would have thought that they would have become a real party even then?
But they couldn't. But they couldn't succeed without the collapse of the Whigs, and that's sort of my other, the other prong of my thesis, and that is that any third party that reaches ascendancy in the American political process, at least history teaches us, will by definition de facto become the second party, and the party that it has replaced will simply wither into disuse and the dustbin of history.
Well, that's what I'd like to see, actually. I'd like to see. Current parties wither into the dustbin of history. Yes.
Some of this is a die-off factor too, Carolyn. there are people and attitudes that just simply have to die and let a new generation take over.
The biggest problem in our system is the damn money. We have got to get money out of this equation because there's money in the political system that invites the big folks who can, you know, create the big bundles of cash for candidates that, you know,
yeah, clean.
That,
in other words,
that begs for favors.
The shorthand for that is clean elections.
Exactly.
And again, that movement is gaining some traction, and it's gaining for precisely the same reasons that I mentioned earlier. People in the several states who are moving it on local levels,
yes,
and making it progress to a state level, and eventually, yes, it becomes a federal
yes,
matter.
Yes, that is definitely the way to go, because think of how unproductive it is, all of the money that we spend on these campaigns.
Well, when
it's it's going to be $1 billion or more dollars this time.
Right. It's going to be $1 billion to run a campaign that's based largely upon negative advertising and sniping. And in the meantime, nobody ever sees, with a few possible exceptions, nobody ever asks, gee, what could that $1 billion have really done?
Yeah. Just as we don't ask that same thing about the Iraq War, people are now starting to ask. But for years there, we just spent that money, and only a few lonely voices like Jim Hightower and Ben Cohen and folks like that were saying, gee, think about how many kids we could put into Head Start for just a fraction of that money, and how many, you know, this, and how many hospitals we could refit, you know, all the things they could do with all that money. So only now are people finally starting to say, you know what, that Iraq War, that is one big drag on our economy.
And meanwhile, George Bush gets told about $4 a gallon gas, and he says, that's very interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Sort of like it when his dad went to the grocery store.
It was his daddy's barcode scanner moment. These people are utterly disconnected from anything resembling reality.
Well, of course they are. They always have been. Their entire lives they've spent in cocoons. George Bush never had to worry about where his next $1 million was coming from.
No, because there was always a Saudi oil man there ready to write the check.
That's right. Somebody that wanted some kind of favor from his dad.
And at what point in time, Caro, do we get to start asking, what is that buying?
I've been asking it for 8 years now.
I know.
I think you've been asking it too.
And but
when will we be able to demand answers to that question? That's what gets to me.
And what, you know, that comes back to my question about, you know, finally turning the guns on McCain, so to speak, figuratively, Agent Fred. Agent Fred listens every night. We have proof that we've got a listener in the bowels of the National Security Agency. I kid you not.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to say things like figuratively, Agent Fred. But that's one of the things that drives me nuts about McCain. This straight shooter, square shooter, oh gosh, oh golly gee, maverick line of hocus pocus BS has got to be pulled down. And I mean, not gently either. I mean, this is, we got to give John McCain's reputation, because that's all it is. It's reputation. It's fiction. It's fantasy land. The same treatment that the Marines gave the statue of Saddam in Baghdad. It's mm-hmm. got to be pulled down. So, you know, I take some solace when I see somebody like Obama firing back at him. When he tried to make that snarky little, where he said, oh, I hate to tell Senator Obama, but Al-Qaeda's already in Iraq. Well, that wasn't the question that was asked him. They said, if they come back, would you? But, you know, I don't see anybody out there saying, John, buddy, and McCain, I mean, Obama came back nicely on that.
Yes,
but I don't see anybody out there saying somebody needs to tell John McCain that less than 5% of the attacks taking place in Iraq are driven by Al-Qaeda.
Or that the other thing he said is that there was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq until John McCain and George Bush sent our troops there.
And you know what? I was kind of proud of him for not doing?
What?
Not including Hillary Clinton in that statement.
Yeah, you're right. That was a good thing for him not to do.
Although
his campaign had been trying to implicate her. And had been saying that that Hillary Clinton and John McCain were the same in regard to the Iraq War before the war, and that is not true. That is not true.
No, I don't think Hillary Clinton and John McCain are two peas in a pod. I think John McCain is uniquely insane, as a matter of fact. And proof being, and I saw this in your digest today, the flap over the Hagee endorsement. Doesn't that just make you want to eat a bowl full of dirt and run rabbits?
That's what's coming. You know, if Obama is the nominee, just get used to it, because that is the kind of thing that's going to go on all the time. And you know, McCain will poo-poo it and say, oh, no, that is not the way I believe. And then the Republican National Committee will say, oh, no, that's not what we believe. And meanwhile, the stuff will keep going on and keep going on and keep going on.
Right, which goes back to the business about that, you know, the RNC has now acknowledged that they've got full traction on their blood and religion libel on Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And it's scary because a 48 to 47% with, you know, 2 or 3%, you know, voting oddball. That's all you need for a nice Diebold election theft.
Well, there's been a lot of Republican crossover in the primaries and a lot of independent crossover for Obama. And, you know, of course, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's so great. He brings independents into the party. He brings Republicans into the party. And I go, I don't want them. You know, the Democratic leadership is too far to the right already. I don't want them thinking they have to accommodate these people too and go.
I don't want. I don't want to owe them anything.
There you go. But there's the other possibility, and that is that, as we know from this one group, Republicans for Obama, it's be a Democrat for a day, and beat the bitch. You know. There's a lot of that going on too. So I don't know. I do think that Karl Rove is mucking with us. I really, really believe that.
And yet, I don't think you're going to see the news media come out, Caro, and have the full-on kicking its heels against the floor, screaming hissy about Pastor Hagee that they had about the Louis Farrakhan thing.
No, and in fact, they haven't really dared touch it. There was another thing that I posted today from Digby, where she talked about a television show that where everybody was, you know, kind of tippy-toeing around the Hagee thing and not daring to criticize it for what it is. And this has been one of my biggest things about the mainstream media that I just can't stand about them. They don't dare say, this is wrong. This is wrong. You do not... In this country where we are trying to build racial equality, we are trying to build comity among all the peoples who live here, we can't have this. We can't have people like this saying vicious, nasty things just based on race. We can't have that. But they won't say that. You know, they kind of tiptoe, well, you know, guys, this is what this one said, and that's what that one said. You know, this guy said the earth is round, and that guy said the earth is flat, and... There you have it.
The thing that comes with Pastor Hagee that makes him hard to attack, if you will, is the insulation. You know, he bought and paid for some insulation over the last 2 or 3 years by putting together a group called Koofy. You familiar with them?
No, I don't know what that is.
Citizens United for Israel.
Oh, Lord.
If you go and search for it... Oh, goodness. A couple of film... Max Blumenstein. Sidney Blumenstein's son. Max did... shooting partner, Thomas Shoemaker, did a brilliant, brilliant film piece on their latest convention. And it's got footage of Pastor Hagee... No, of Joe Lieberman. Joe Lieberman standing up at this Koofy conference... and declaring that Pastor Hagee is greater than Moses.
Oh, no.
And so Koofy is just absolutely chin-deep in AIPAC.
Mm-hmm.
And consequently, a shot across the bow at Pastor Hagee will immediately be rejoined as an attack upon Israel.
Well, wait until, I don't know if Hagee knows this yet, but Obama served on a board of an organization that raised money for the poor in Palestine. So, you know, to a real Israel, you know, one that's totally dedicated all Israel all the time, that's a big bad no-no.
Yeah, the Israel can do no wrong crowd.
And
I'm not an Israel hater, not by any stretch of the imagination.
I've tried to stay neutral in that whole conflict because I don't know enough about it, you know. But you, no matter what you say, the proponents of one side or the other, you hate Israel, you hate Palestine.
Well, yeah, because the thing is so charged that anybody who ever brought Alan Dershowitz a cold cup of coffee is a Jew hater,
anti-Semite. Yeah,
so it's going to be hard. The media will be loathe, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. The media will be loathe to criticize Hagee's endorsement of McCain. The McCain camp came out today and said, well, we don't agree with him about everything, but we sure are glad he endorsed us.
There you go.
Because Hagee is a nut job.
Yeah.
Now, granted, radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee came out and said he was very disappointed in Brother Hagee. He asked him not to endorse McCain yet and just stay out of this till the nomination was won. And I don't understand why he's doing what he's doing. Mm. Well, I do. A couple of phone calls have been made.
Oh, well, there's a lot of that kind of...
The dime has been dropped, if you will.
Well, again, you know, you get money in the process, and then you get favors for favors. I mean, for example, there was an article recently by a reporter that works in Houston now, that used to work here in Chicago and covered Barack Obama, among other people. And it points out in this article that Obama went to the newly minted head of the Illinois Senate Emil Jones, who is black, and, you know, because the Republicans were in charge for years here, so the year that Democrats took over when Ron Blagojevich won as governor, Obama went to Jones and said, I want to be a U.S. senator, and Jones said, okay, I'll make me a senator. So, you know, he started giving Obama all the good bills over the heads of people that had really worked on those bills for a long time and stuff like that. And then in return, one of the few things that Obama has done as a U.S. senator is to give a lot of pork to Emil Jones's district. You know, I mean, it just never ends.
That is part and parcel of some of what is our political system. I despise it. I loathe it. On the other hand, however, when you're dealing with you see the desperation of the right coming out in things like Pastor Hagee coming forward. Pastor Hagee, that just makes charlatan.
Not sure it's desperation on their part. I think they just love to hate.
Yeah, but the Hagee thing is very clear and very deliberate, insofar as it is an attempt to draw away the fundies, you know, the snake handlers and strychnine drinkers and tongue speakers who have heretofore alloyed, not just allied, but alloyed themselves to Mike Huckabee.
There's that, but also the many, many conservatives who really don't like John McCain, okay? So how do you make them stand John McCain? By hating somebody else more, okay? Hillary was supposed to be that stand-in. And, you know, a lot of Democrats felt that way, too. Oh, see, the right wing, they'll come out to vote against her, whereas they won't against Obama. Guess what?
Oh, they're going to do what they do.
They're priming him right now to be that stand-in, you know.
Yeah, rattlesnakes are in the biting business.
That's right. That's a good one. I hadn't heard that.
So to expect the Republicans, no. I don't buy it. I don't buy it for a minute. The question remains, however, all parody aside, what Samantha Bee said and what the Onion piece brought forward has a profound element of truth in it, that the media are kingmakers, whether we like it or not.
Oh, yes.
And so if the McCain...
And they love being that.
Sure they do.
Don't want anybody to get in their way.
And you know what? Nobody's going to swift vote John McCain. Nobody's gonna bring, and this is what's depressing to me, because when I say nobody is, what I'm actually saying is, why won't somebody? Because it's fair game. John McCain admitted in his own autobiography that under the influence of torture, he denounced the United States of America. Now,
I can't imagine that anybody wouldn't, you know.
But we won't. We're the nice people, Caro. You know, nobody's going to look at him and say, hey, John, why can't you raise your arms, buddy?
Yeah.
Because you were tortured. Now, do you want to talk to us some more about what is and isn't torture?
Yeah. And he spilled his soul. It's not just recently either. I mean, it started with the Keating thing. And, you know, he was one of the Keating Five. Remember?
And I hope somebody out there, I hope Howard Dean or anybody, is out there doing, I mean, the really hard skull sweat opposition research to beat him absolutely senseless with the Keating Five. Because
if they can, that's the thing. The media probably don't want to bring it up. And this is...
Well, that's what that comes back to the Kingmaker thing.
Well, it's partly that, but it's also partly it's old, you know. I mean, it's old, over, done with, et cetera, et cetera. The reason Whitewater came up again and kept going, because I think you probably know that the Clintons were definitively cleared of any wrongdoing in the Whitewater land deal before Bill Clinton became president.
Yes.
Because George H.W. Bush tried to find something on him. He had an independent Republican, well-thought-of lawyer do a study on it, and that lawyer found nothing wrong. The report was written, filed, you'd think it was over and done with. Well, $70 million later, what kept whipping that frenzy up was was having the ability to appoint a special prosecutor or force the administration to appoint a special prosecutor, making sure that the person, the first guy appointed was sane, okay, and was actually trying to do
right, and then you, but then, but
so
then you
get rid of him.
Yeah, then you get the interplay between D.C. Circuit Court Judge David Sentell and Ken Starr. And long after Whitewater, the land deal itself was a non-issue, he kept going back, and Sentell kept expanding the jurisdiction of the inquiry.
And they kept leaking the stuff supposedly from their investigation. Oh, we found something now that Hillary Clinton is going to be indicted any day now, any day. That's leaked from.
Yeah, yeah. She killed Vince Foster. I mean, Dan Burton went out in his backyard in Indiana and shot the watermelons to prove it.
Yes, and both Clintons were involved in drug smuggling at MENA, Arkansas.
Oh, the MENA airport. Oh, yes, yeah, and the Clinton Chronicles tape that Jerry Falwell had to repudiate his own tape. Hey, Kara, we've got a caller on the line. Let's see who what somebody wants to bring to the table here.
All righty.
Hi, who've I got?
Up.
Yeah, hi.
This is Luke.
Hey, Luke, how are you?
I'm sorry, I called in cold. I didn't know who you had on tonight. I even got the computer on.
Oh, gosh almighty. You want to try back later then?
Sure, that's fine. I'm sorry.
Oh, no problems, Luke. Talk to you later. Bye now. Okay, we will move on toward the top of the hour and close out the hour. Everything that was done to the Clintons was proven to be garbage.
Mm-hmm.
$70 million. No Clinton administration officials of any note indicted. I think there was one indictment, maybe Henry Cisneros.
Yes, that was because of something.
Right, that was
with a mistress. It didn't have to do with.
Yeah, it was entirely ancillary. It was sort of an acorn that the blind hog found. But so you got none of that. You lay that up against, say, the Reagan administration, the single most corrupt, most indicted administration in American history, including the Grant gang.
Unbelievably corrupt.
And yet, which one still
and yet,
has...
what the right-wingers will tell you is that the Clinton administration was the most corrupt administration in history, when in fact it was the least corrupt.
Yeah.
This is the power of the right-wing media machine, and Democrats continue to refuse to understand its power and to know that we have to dedicate resources to combat it.
So which one still has the staying power? How many people know who Adnan Khashoggi was? How many people know who the Sultan of Brunei was? How many people can talk about Adolfo Calero?
Mm-hmm.
And those are infamous names. The base reference now is
Paula Jones
and the blue dress.
Jennifer Flowers.
And I lay this at the feet of the media too, Caro, because when everybody was looking up and realizing that Ronald Reagan should be, ought to be, in any kind of just world, would be impeached and driven from office, organizations like the Washington Post said, America can't stand a constitutional crisis. Which basically meant that the Washington Post didn't want to have to write about a constitutional crisis.
No, they didn't want to have to deal with it because that was their political bread and butter. And besides, in Sally Quinn's Saturday evening soirees, they liked having the Reagan people there. They hated the Clinton people. The Clinton people were so country, And
I mean, they want to make them. Exactly. They want us to serve them Jimmy Dean sausage balls with the shredded cheddar and the Bisquick. God, I hate them things. Why? Yeah, when we had the Reagans, we were serving Lark's Vomit canapes, and
yeah,
it was so much more classy. Oh,
Lee and Chablis.
Chablis. But that's how we get where we are, Carol.
Yes, it is. And it comes from people being in a little insular situation where they even when they are attacked, they circle the wagons and always think they're right, always defend each other, instead of looking at the criticism that comes their way and saying, is there any validity to it, to that? That is the one thing I have always tried to do, is say, if somebody criticizes me, I don't have to believe it, but what I do have to do is to look at it, try to look at it as objectively as I can and see if there's any merit. If there's any merit, then it's my obligation to fix the error as best I can, or to change my ways as best I can. But then I can say, okay, the rest of it is unmerited, or the whole thing is unmerited, like stupid blah, 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 you know, that kind of stuff. How that could be constructive in any way, I don't know anyhow. But these people feel as though any attack on them has to be wrong. And I have to tell you that I think that the same thing has been happening in the stratosphere of the blogosphere, that there are a few people up there who, you know, have the most traveled blogs, and they can't be bothered with us little folks, and they can't nobody can criticize them. They're always right, and everybody else is always wrong, and they're running blindly into the same kind of canyon that over the same kind of cliff that that the mainstream media have done. It's very sad to see.
It is indeed, and you know, I'm glad that at least somebody like you is out there talking about this stuff, and there are people talking about it. You know, I sent you a little, not for publication, just sort of a musing the other day. And you talk about some of these blogs that have significant power and things like that. I'm still trying to figure out how it takes $25,000 a month to run a text blog, but you know, I'm just crazy.
Yes, I need to get you an answer on that. I do know some of the situation behind that.
So. I'd love to see it, because we're getting along and everything, but where, again, it's the final inquiry is, how do we make what we spend count? Is you know, if you've only got $10 to do something with, are you better off sending it to a political campaign or to a political blog or what?
Yeah.
Or just using that to go to the movies on, maybe one person can get into the movie.
Why I wanted to start an organization that would be a kind of an overall umbrella for a lot of those activities. It would be a place where people could make one subscription. It would cover a lot of blogs. It would cover, maybe even political campaigns in another arm, okay? But also even cover subscriptions to mainstream publications as well, because look what's happening with the media. They're consolidating so that there are only a few big media companies that own all the major media, okay? And then the other thing is that more and more subscriptions are going away, and all they have is advertising. So the media are doubly controlled by big corporations, you know, both from the ownership of the medium itself, and then from the income for the medium, which is from other big corporations.
Yeah, and suddenly the lights begin to go on.
And yet, if we had a big organization of people, a million people who donated $10 a month, you're talking about a ton of money, and that could have a lot of influence on media organizations and say, you want our subscription? You're going to report it like it is, and not like the, you know, big corporations want you.
And not just that, but pay reporters. You know, actually create another medium that's dedicated to not being, not being terrified of having some right winger calling you liberal bias. Hell yeah, we'll have us some liberal bias, because, you know, there's enough conservative bias out there to last a lifetime.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, I want to be in on this this skull sweating with you if you want to engage in that level of dialogue. I'm always up for ideas and. Two brains is always better working than one.
You're right.
And frankly, five or ten or 20 brains is even more so.
Well, I'll send you a link to something I wrote up on it, and take a look at it over the weekend, and let me know what you think.
Oh, I sure will. Caro, have yourself a wonderful, warm,
you too,
non-slippery weekend. Spring is coming, whether it looks like it or not. And
if you say so.
Faith is all I have at this point in time, Caro. So, you know, leave me what I have.
Well, it's been fun.
It has been. You take care. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. A mind that never, never, never stops turning, stops working, and stops trying to find an answer to get us out of the right-wing swamp that we live in. So that's hour number one on this Friday night. Your thoughts, your impressions, the stories you want to bring to the forefront are up next, if that's what you choose to do. I've got some stories of my own that I think bear talking about. Anyway, you slice it, we're going to have two more hours of Jim Dandy, good conversation coming. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on your nickel, on your unlimited long-distance dialing plan, if you've got one of those, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
To be less polite, I'm saying what I really think. The president's a fool, I don't want to get up early, and I wish I had a good stiff drink. I'm trying to be less polite, I want to call a spade a spade. I want to stop the war because I know the war will send too many children to an early grave.
Second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
I just love that song. I love that whole album. Will Kimbrough's American Itis. What a writer, what a player. And in that instance, I think in many ways that should be the anthem for the Horn. And it should be an anthem for anybody who is sick to death of having to listen to right-wing insanity and then still having to come back, well, I respect your opinion.
You're crazier than a sprayed roach and a run-over dog altogether, and it sounds like you've been eating acid since you were born. But I respect your opinion. Hogwash.
Do we respect the opinions of blithering idiots and raving maniacs? I ask because I've got a clip here from America's favorite KKK member, the Grand Media Kleagle himself, Bill O'Reilly. Check it out.
Reagan got sick a few weeks ago, fell down, hurt herself, went to the hospital, and the... I'm not going to call her name, Arianna Huffington. I have no respect for the woman. I think that she is hurting the country. I wish everybody felt the way I did. Allowed on her website vicious, vile things to be posted about Nancy Reagan. What did you think about that?
Well, yeah, this happens frequently, unfortunately, on the left-wing blogs. And full disclosure, I am a conservative blogger, but I think I have a fair assessment of this when I say that...
This is Mary Catherine Hamm, who, as a conservative blogger, can, of course, give you the straight skinny about all us mean left-wingers and how the blood drips from our fangs.
Every time a conservative gets injured, dies, has something threatening them, whether it's Tony Snow with cancer or Mrs. Reagan falling down, there is often on Democratic Underground or Huffington Post
a
celebration threat.
Let me just read you one. Like her evil husband, she has lived far too long. Here's hoping she dies in the tub. And now Arianna Huffington is the editor of this. She knows it comes in, puts it up.
But see, that's not a blog at Huffington Post. But then again, Bill O'Reilly's Methuselah demographic doesn't fully understand the blogging thing. No offense to our older listeners, of course, who do get it. Obviously, you get it because you're listening on the computer. But then again, that's the difference between being an old right-winger and an old liberal. Because older liberals are, you know, trying to stay in touch with, you know, with the culture, with the reality, with the going forwards of technology. They tend to have computers. They tend to have taken the time it takes to, you know, learn to use email and learn to find websites. And on the other hand, O'Reilly's Methuselah is, Arianna Huffington's putting up stuff about hoping Nancy Reagan dies in the tub. That's just terrible. Arianna Huffington didn't put... It's so disingenuous. But it's going to get worse, and the irony will not be lost on you.
Along with a lot of other vile stuff. I mean, the whole thing is a sewer.
Right. Well,
don't you think Americans should start holding people like Arianna Huffington accountable for this?
Well, I think so.
You know, what's the difference between the Ku Klux Klan and Arianna Huffington? What's the difference?
Well, Bill, the difference between Arianna Huffington and the Ku Klux Klan is that the Ku Klux Klan doesn't have Arianna Huffington out there talking about wanting to lynch the wife of an African-American presidential candidate. I know. Preaching to the converted, preaching to the choir, but it's emblematic of Bill O'Reilly's utter and complete and total lack of respect for his audience that he sits there and lies like this and just assumes and expects, rightly or wrongly, I suspect rightly, it is after all a Fox audience, his audience to go, okay, if you say it, Bill, that means it must be true. That's mouth breathing, by the way.
Well, I think there's a difference. But I think things have actually improved because people like you and like myself speak out about these things and say, hey, this is an answer.
Huffington and the Nazis.
I don't see any difference between Huffington and the Nazis. Is he talking about those innocent Nazis that were gunned down by the Americans at Malmedy? Are those Nazis? That he had bass ackwards like his, I personally think that Bill O'Reilly has had a profound level of plastic surgery, and he's actually taught his rectum to speak, and the rest of his face is just painted on. Because if ever there was a case of talking out of one's butt, Bill O'Reilly is the poster child for it. But it's all part of a piece. We know this. And that's why ideas like Caro mentioned of, you know, building a consortium for liberal media, progressive media, is important. And I will submit to you from the heart of my own determination and my own ego, that is why things like the horn are important. We grow every day. Caller by caller by caller, listener by listener by listener, blogger by blogger. And people realize that there is an alternative to corporatized media. And the cool thing is, it's not the Methuselah demographic that Bill O'Reilly has. It's 20-somethings and 30-somethings and 40-somethings and 50-somethings and 60. It's everybody. Because the hunger for reality, the hunger for real facts, is palpable in this country. The only thing is that in the so-called free market, no matter how great the hunger, the corporatized media will not assuage that hunger. And you have to go and find it for yourself. Those of you who found it here, I am so honored and so humbled every night that I am here to get to sit down and share my time with you and know that you have made an equal commitment to share your time with me. It feels an awful lot like family. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Hey.
Well, hey, Juanita, how are you?
Okay, I can be sure you're talking to me.
Well, see, when you hear that little noise that kind of goes, that means you're on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll know then next time. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
No, I just wanted to call us to talk, say a little about John McCain.
Do please.
A reminder that he was wrong about Kosovo.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting that he always wants to send troops in?
Yes, it
he
is.
He always wants to put our troops in.
And he was one of the ones that was hollering for all he was worth that we'd never be able to win the push back that uprising or the genocide or the ethnic cleansing that was going on without putting in, you know, divisions and divisions of infantry.
Right. And he did it over and over again. He didn't just say it was one time. That's when I was listening pretty much all the time.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's without reference to the rightness or wrongness of it. I personally, I'm anti-war. And I don't necessarily think that was the right choice, but it turns out.
Oh, bombing all of them.
Bombing civilian infrastructure is wrong, regardless of whether it's Democrats or Republicans doing it.
Yeah, and even though none of us were killed, you know.
I'm sure
a lot of those people were.
I was struck by the hypocrisy of it, Juanita, because of the fact that. It proved that we would go in under just about any circumstance to stop the mass killing of white people. But on the other hand, Rwanda, not so much.
No, it's a totally different story, isn't it? And they don't have oil and all that kind of good stuff. They don't have anything. And another thing I would just like to talk about is I heard some on another show this morning they were talking about people calling in about the state of the Black Union, you know, the yearly thing on C-SPAN.
Mm-hmm.
And some woman called in about, and others were backing her up about how racist and hateful Dick Gregory, of course, Jesse Jackson, and the guy from New York.
Oh, Al Sharpton.
Al Sharpton, yeah. And I heard them, and I didn't see it that way. In fact, I think they were pretty much admonishing the blacks as if Obama did not win, blacks who were for Obama, if they did not win, they were hoping that they would support Hillary, if she was the, you know, the nominee. And Dick Gregory, I love Dick Gregory. I've been listening. I heard him years ago when he first, I guess, first started out. He was real young. And he was, you know, he's a comedian. And he was hilarious.
Oh, he was a scream.
He brought the house down on this program, too. He was so funny. But he tells the truth with his humor.
Well, he's brought his wit to bear, Juanita, on very, very profound social issues. And
yeah.
I've heard way back when I was riding a dinosaur to class in college, he spoke at WVU, and I went to hear him, and you know.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, and I came away just blown away.
Yeah,
what Dick Gregory and Al Sharpton, well, what people like that do is they make some white people really, really
yeah.
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because there is still an element in this country that uses on a routine basis the word uppity.
Well, what I would like to say about Dick Gregory, personally, I credit him for opening my eyes about my racist attitudes, you know, that I wasn't really taught, but they were there. You know, racism was in the air, believe me. And he was so funny, and some of the things he would say would kind of startle me, but I listened to him, and I got to agree with him most of the time, too. But it helped me to see the other point of view. And I just adore him. I think he's one of the funniest men around. And I like men. I like men that are funny, and I like you know, ones that are funny
and if you can
that abides with you, you know.
Yeah, and if you can laugh and think at the same time,
right.
the fact that you got a giggle out of it often makes it stay in your mind prevalently than if not.
Yeah.
Some of my
yeah.
best professors who had the most profound effect on me in my education were the ones who could convey just life-changing information, but, you know, drop a one-liner in here and there. That would it's kind of like glue that makes it stick in your brain
mm-hmm.
cells.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed you and Peter and Mark yesterday especially. I laughed my head off. Y'all were something. Yeah, that was a wonderful program. The whole thing, you know, it was sad and it was funny, and you just had some of everything.
I mean,
y'all should go on a tour or something.
Well, you know, if anybody would let us speak, I bet we would.
Oh, I mean, you should be on.
No,
on C-SPAN or something.
You know, I love everybody here on the horn works extremely well off of the others.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
we have,
y'all were great.
You know, we're not like a bunch of multimillionaires who never have anything to do with each other and just do our shows individually.
Uh-huh.
One of the beauties of the horn, Juanita, is that we have come. Is that, you know, we are like family. I mean,
yeah.
I have met and hung out with a little bit Mark Levine. I have never set eyes on Guy James or Peter Godbold or John Fox. And yet I feel like all of these people
yeah.
are as close as my own family.
Yeah.
And because of that rapport, I think we interact that way.
Yeah.
And for me, it makes it a hell of a lot more fun.
Well, you know, I get the feeling like with you that you really care about me. And you know what I mean. You know, I'm old enough to be your mother. I'm not talking about the other way, please.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Well,
but I do.
I feel like
that, you know, you'll say, oh, I'm so sorry about that. You know, it's just, you feel, and it's a good feeling to, you know, something I was raised around. I mean, my parents were so loving and so sweet, and I really miss that, I'll tell you.
As I do mine. I ran into,
yeah.
I played hooky last night and went down to the screening of B.J. Goodmanson's Rise Up
yeah,
West Virginia.
Wanted, ask you about that. Yeah.
What a magnificent film. What a truly
right.
magnificent film. Right. And, you know, she's trying to line up screenings here, there, and everywhere. And it's such a profound thing. And mm-hmm. that's not just because my little voice is in it either. It would be
mm-hmm.
it might even be better without me in it. I'm not sure.
I'll doubt.
I met two people down there last night who were she introduced me because I was in the crowd and my voice is in the film. And a lady came up and introduced herself to me, and I met her and her husband, and lo and behold, Juanita, they had gone to school with my mama and daddy.
Oh. Thank you, feel good.
And, I mean, I got tears in my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And it just touched me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I hope that's something, and I take that compliment you have offered, you don't know how sincerely,
mm-hmm.
because I hope that with everybody here on the horn that we're conveying that, because we talk about, it was Bruce Birch who first said, you know, we are community building here. Mm-hmm. And he gave, you know, he gave words to what the spirit was. And I have taken that with me ever since then. And it is the absolute truth. We are trying to build community. We are trying to build mm-hmm. family. We are trying to build an extended network of people who care about each other. And I will take this moment, and I'm not going to try to make you blush or anything, but we got a contribution in the other night. And the message with the contribution said, please treat this as half of this being for Juanita.
Oh, my goodness, that's happened before.
Yes, it has, and it's happened again. And it's because there are people out all over the country who care about the people they hear on this
yes.
program or whose emails they hear read. And it's my God, Juanita, how profound it is to me to know that I'm a little part of putting this community together.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you are. It's like a cold wash rag on your face when you're falling asleep. It just shocks you
yeah.
into your consciousness to realize the success that we've had and know the potential that we have
mm-hmm.
For reaching out to more and more people.
Yeah, and stay as sweet as you are.
Well, we'll let Agnes pass judgment on how sweet I am.
Well, you know, even Eva Braun thought Taylor was kind of sweet.
Okay, now we're into full on damning with faint praise, Juanita.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I do, I do, and you know, one of these days when we've all got everything that we need to have to make everything go. I still think a horn convention would be a darn good time, and just everybody bring a covered dish, and somebody bring a guitar, and somebody else bring a banjo, and we'll
bring
just have that.
Sushi.
I'll roll the sushi, Juanita.
I got to sing that song.
One of these days, yes, you do.
Yeah. There's one part of it I'm afraid I'll forget.
Well, I've got the copy of it if you do. So yeah. Let me know if you think.
Try it now.
Well, I've got a couple of calls stacked up, so let's. I don't know. I think that would work well on a prayer meeting, don't you?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I'll practice that.
All right,
my
you warm up.
My son got me a microphone, and I was going to record it, but he's got to put the microphone together. He's occupied with other things.
Well, I was going to say you got some other irons in the fire right now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, ten to those first, Juanita.
Oh, I was going to tell you that when I get to be a millionaire off of my Amazon store.
Yes. Yes.
I'm gonna surprise you.
All right, I'll be waiting.
My Amazon store, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You can make so much money with.
Well, you got, and you got
like a wish list.
Well, that's let's see. We got a lottery drawing tomorrow night here in West Virginia, so I got to go out and get my tickets because, like I said, that's my retirement plan.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Hey Juanita, you have a wonderful weekend. All right.
You too.
Okay.
And take care.
Sure will. Bye
bye.
And let's see. Let's roll with it. That's just so sweet. Let's see what's going on here. Hi, who've I got?
Well, now, Bob, I don't know who you got here.
Oh, my goodness. Brother Andy.
Well, I do declare I am back on the network.
And happy I am to hear you.
Yeah, man. How are things? All right?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good, I think.
Cool.
I've got a bad case of spring fever, and spring is not cooperating.
Well, now you got a month or two until spring, dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, it snowed on Easter last year, and I swore all that Sunday, so I'm probably working off some sin or something.
You live in the mountains. Snow happens, man. You just have to deal with that. Sorry.
Yeah, this is not the mountains of Ecuador.
Well, no. I was going to call last week, but what happened?
I don't know. I was here.
You were here. I wasn't here.
Oh.
Yeah, I've been having computer issues.
Oh.
It's slowly dying, Bob. It's slowly dying.
Hal is not feeling so well.
No, it's not good, man.
I'm sorry, Andy. I can't connect now.
Well, yeah. If it's not one thing, it's the other. But anyway, enough about the computer. It's working right now. So.
Hey, can we have a quick royal moment, Andy?
A royal moment?
Yes.
Are you going to ask me about Harry?
Well, not precisely about Harry. I mean, the story is what the story is, and Matt Drudge is a piece of crap, and we all know that.
Yeah.
But there's a quote.
Uh-huh.
There's a quote from Harry in the news story that I have here, and it's way down in the bottom of the story, and you know how it is with me. It doesn't have to be up in the first couple of paragraphs to grab my attention.
Right.
So it was this line. I'm clicking through tabs here. There it is. There it is. It's a quote from Harry.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, wait a minute. Yeah. Now that you come to think about it, it's quite worrying, talking about having been outed by Matt Drudge.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you come to think about it, it's quite worrying. But as I say, now that the film's been made and now people will know I'm out here, no doubt I'll be a top target. Well, they've already called him home.
Yeah.
But then he goes on, it says, talking about his experiences on the front lines, Harry said, quote, I haven't really had a shower for 4 days. I haven't washed my clothes for a week. It's very nice to be a sort of a normal person for once. Now, does that...
Yeah, bless him.
Does that... I mean, I'm guessing that Andy bathes sitting there in Wales. I mean, you're into the bathing thing, right? And the whole hygiene cult.
Yeah. What he means is, he's bless him, he's not that bright. Is one thing you should always think about.
He's a Windsor. What do you want? You know.
Well, you know, he's the spare as well. I mean, he's the third in line, and if Charles lives anywhere near as long as the Queen, then you know. William's probably not going to get a look in. So
at this point in time, Harry is sort of looking up and realizing that he's the proverbial kickstand on the submarine.
Well, he probably doesn't even quite realize that because he's not very bright. I mean, it's not entirely clear that he's actually the heir to the throne anyway because he looks like his mother. He doesn't look anything like his father. He does look quite a lot like a guy that was rumored to be having an affair with Diana, but that's a conspiracy theory, and we don't know. We don't deal with
right.
That.
No. Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, he's not very bright. He's probably quite amiable, but I mean, if you lived in a family like the royal family, don't you think you'd want to get out and the army?
Oh no. I sincerely identify with that. There are few people as publicly tormented as the House of Windsor, you know, Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Harry isn't very good at expressing himself. So what he means by normal is he gets to be one of the boys in the army because that's all he knows is normal. You know, he went to public school and then he went into the army.
Did he go to Sandhurst?
Yeah, I think it was Sandhurst. Yeah, they both went there, yeah. But, yeah, it's completely irrelevant. You know, he was obviously going to get posted there. They have to get some combat experience in every generation. Andrew went off to the Falklands. Charles wasn't allowed in combat, but he was allowed on warships, stuff like that. You know, they
well, truth be told, while I don't approve of the wars themselves, and let's be clear about that,
yeah.
I halfway applaud the royals for letting him go.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm no fan of the royals. If they're not actively part of the ruling class, they're controlled by them.
We have yet to see Babs or Jenna Bush anywhere near a field of conflict.
Well, yeah, I mean, kudos to the royal family for putting some blood in the game, as it were. You know, I mean, he could have been taken out by an American war jet, an American fighter jet, or American... by a attack helicopter or an American tank.
Well, why do you think he was down in Helmand? Why do you think he was down in Helmand where we ain't?
No. You're flying cover missions over that part of the. That's in the south. The American stuff operating out of the. Is it the Indian Ocean?
Oh dear, my bad. Sorry.
Yeah. It's, the Germans are up in the north where they don't fly. They're the ones where you're safe because they don't turn up. So you're not going to get shot by them.
Yeah. Well. You can trust the modern Luftwaffe.
Well, they don't fly after 5 o'clock in the evening.
Well, no, that's when the schnapps comes out.
I mean, that's how we used to do wars, you know, invasion of Sicily. Hang on, why have you all stopped? Tea time. What? But, you know, just the whole situation is slightly farcical anyway, you know. At least they put Harry in there, but they only did it for publicity, so I don't really care that much. Do you know what I mean? It just kind of irritates me that... There's such a big fuss being made about it, and really, I mean, you know, he's...
Is there really a full-on fuss over there?
Well, yeah, I mean, the British newspapers are kind of split between just reporting that he's there and having a bit of a strop at, you know, the American source that released it. And they all... No, I don't think anyone yet has named Drudge that I've seen. They might have done in some of the papers, but...
Well, that's what I've seen over here, that it was
on
Drudge.
On the web, yeah, it's yeah. quite clear that it's Drudge, but on the BBC website and stuff like that, it's just un-American... You know, I think they got as close to saying the American website rather than American news source and stuff like that. But on the BBC News, they were referring to Drudge as an American news source.
But the let me see if I've got this right, Andy. The American media knew it too.
Yeah, well,
and everybody was sort of in on the dodge and okay, we won't tell.
No. Well, what they would have done is that, you know, they've got to get the shots, haven't they, and get the interviews while he's there. So all of that stuff would have been taped. You know, the bits where he's walking around on patrol, that would have all been being taped by the BBC, and ABC and CNN and all the other alphabets would have got their paws on it. And they'd have signed a secrecy deal until... And, you know, they're part of the coalition of media. They're all on ball.
And that's why the quote and that topic is why I brought this otherwise vacuous story up, because...
Yeah, I mean,
the story isn't Harry in Afghanistan. The story is that the American media, the British media, and whoever else was involved will be complicit in conspiracies any old time that they feel like it is to their benefit to do so.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, Drudge kind of shot the right wing in the foot, which he does occasionally. But, you know, the idea was, obviously, to get the pictures, get the story, have it all set up, wait till he comes home. Wait for the opportune moment and then go, oh, Harry went to Afghanistan. Isn't he a war hero?
Well, my personal feeling, Andy, is that the story would have been disclosed the next time that Harry showed up at a drunken stag binge in Nazi kit.
Well, yeah.
And then you blame it on PTSD and you call him a hero and everything's okay again.
No, I mean, it was purely for the consumption of the Americans. It wasn't for the consumption of the British, because the British just don't give a damn. Because you know how absolutely frothing-at-the-mouth insane your media goes over our royalty? You know, the Queen turns up, woo, off they go. The right wing can do their, like, go crazy, throw bombs.
Oh, we've got such a Tory contingent in this country. We want a king so doggone bad.
Yeah, you're right. Your normal media, the mainstream media, are blatantly monarchist, and that gives the crazy right-wing fundies the ammunition to go raw anti-monarchist, and it means that the crazy left-wing fundies, if there are any left in America, can go anti-monarchist. I mean, it's all about keeping the story going that isn't referring to occupation, conquest, oil wars, death, destruction, uranium.
Yeah, this is a happy story out of all the hell and damnation.
Yeah, you know, it's brave young warrior prince goes off to battle and comes home a hero. I mean, it's just farcical, you know.
And for those with a taste for history, Andy, it doesn't hurt that he's Prince Harry.
Well, yeah.
Because you've actually got some fairly reputable Harrys in your past.
Well, he's got a way to go before he gets anywhere near any of them. Hang on a minute. The black one, the black prince.
John of Gaunt, Henry V.
He killed several hundred Frenchmen before he was 20. So, you know, I think Harry's got a way to go yet.
I know, but, you know, I still think that the Windsors do sit around and grieve a little bit about that whole King of France part in the, you know, in the official title. You know, when are we going to get it back? Because then they wouldn't have to, then they could go back to not living in England anymore.
Well, Well, not that they actually have any claim to that, because they're a bunch of Germans anyway.
There is that.
Yeah. But yes, no, I don't want to talk about our royalty, because they piss me off, Bob, and completely distract me. What was I ringing about? Damn you.
Yeah, I know, my bad. But the media conspiracy part I really wanted to get to, so I apologize.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Because that's what this was.
Well, no, oh, that was it. Nader. Oh,
Nader.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I knew it was politics. Nader. Right. Ralph Nader was on Newsnight the other night doing his, probably, I heard a clip from Russia. It was pretty much the same spiel. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to announce my presidential candidacy because he blinks like a lizard.
He does.
I mean, he doesn't have lizard eyes like McCain's wife and possible girlfriend. They're really scary. They have lizard eyes. But he really, it's very weird. He just kind of, he looked like a kind of Simpsons character. It was very odd. But
he's like one of those characters from Men in Black, you know. Oh, he wasn't blinking his eyes. He was breathing.
Yeah, the skin doesn't quite fit. They're a little alien. But yeah, basically what I got from him is there isn't a true democracy in America. Okay, I agree.
Yeah, I got the memo.
Hmm?
I got the memo.
Yeah, yes. Everyone should have done. The mainstream media is complicit. Okay, I agree. That's apparent. And then he goes, and so I'm announcing my candidacy, and I'm like, where's your party? I mean, you don't have to have a formal party, but you have to have an organization like that's been going since, when was it he last ran? Since then, or before, building a grassroots. He hasn't done any of that.
Well, no, it's a really cool party, Andy. It's just that only really cool people can see it and know about it. That's how cool it is.
It drives me nuts, because he's quite obviously part of the ruling class system. He wouldn't have come out and tried to take Democratic votes away. They're trying to get McCain in. I'm sure they'll be happy with Barack or Hillary, whichever. It's going to be Barack, let's be honest. But McCain would be ideal, because McCain is more war. You know, Barack is assassination.
And as Carolyn Kay noted, Andy, John McCain is also George Bush and Dick Cheney and everybody else's get-out-of-jail-free card.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you know, John McCain is the ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card. Having said that, if Barack Obama gets elected, I'm being cynical here, but I'd probably give him, if he lasts 6 weeks, he's going to make the whole of his first term. But I don't think he's even going to make it to the swearing-in ceremony. I think he's going to be killed before the January 20th. I really do, because I don't trust these bastards one bit. And I think...
Well, how are you supposed to when we've got all... You know, it's not just the story of Dallas and Reunion Arena, Andy, where the Secret Service stood down. It's reports of stand-downs in San Francisco. Okay, it's San Francisco. There was a stand-down in Seattle. There was a stand down in St. Louis, and here's where it starts getting really fun. There was a stand down in Birmingham.
Mm.
Now, when you start talking about stand downs in Birmingham and Dallas, it's no longer just a lapse. It's an open invitation to bump him off.
Yeah, right. And I mean, if the Democratic ticket goes Barack Obama with Hillary Clinton as the vice president, which
I don't think you've got anything to worry about there.
Well, if it does, yeah, they'd probably off him and take her, because she's much more corporatist than he is. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him at all. I'd love it if Barack Obama was the president, because out of the three choices we've got now, he's definitely the best. Not that I do fully think he's a capitalist. He's definitely not socialist, because he's got an idiot healthcare plan. Obviously not thought through, but then so is hers. I mean, hers is just as insane. I don't know what McCain said about healthcare. Screw you, something like that.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's just, I don't know, man. It's quite a depressing thing, you know? Your entire system is so blatantly gamed, and only now are Americans waking up.
That's the trick, though, Andy. You say only now are Americans waking up. It's a select few Americans.
Well, More Americans than ever before, and in quite massive amounts now, are starting to wake up. And of course, you know, just the electoral college thing, the delegate super delegate thing. That's the thing that kind of woke a lot of people up now. But it's about 8 years too late, or 20 years too late, or 100. No, wait. Oh, how old's your country, 250, 300.
Stop it, Andy.
You know, your whole system is so gamed. I mean, when I first learned about American elections in school, when I was about, I don't know, 13, they said, popular vote, and you get these electoral college things, and this is a, these electoral college votes decide the president, and these are apportioned by these individuals in the states. And we were like, hang on a minute.
Yep.
The
time.
Popular vote, you know, and just right there, my teacher was going, well, it sounds like it sounds complicated, but it's really very simple. And she was trying to explain it, and she couldn't. And it was like, all right, okay, let's investigate this. And from then on in, man, I've been looking at America and Britain and other democracies and how they work. And you really aren't a democracy.
Oh, no, no, no. And in fact, the right wing gets rather militant about that in this country, Andy. If you say democracy to them, they will scream in your face and say, we are not a democracy. We are a republic based upon democratic principles.
Well, you're like the Soviet, what was it, the Soviet Federal Socialist Republic. You're the same as that. You're not a republic, and you're not based on democratic principles. And you never have been, more to the point. I mean, you're literally the Muppets, you know. Vote for this one.
I don't think it started out that way, at least.
It wasn't the intention of the people who wrote the document, because if you read the document and abide by the rules, then, you know, it should be all right. But
well, if you read the Constitution and abide by the rules, Andy, George W. Bush doesn't get out of his first term in office.
Well, no.
Because his butt gets impeached.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's where the funky interpretations by the Supreme Court come in. And, you know, having a Supreme Court as a branch to balance the other two is a good idea. Having it staffed exclusively by old, white, rich, fat, ugly, well, pasty white guys for pretty much its entire duration, and then recently chuck in a couple of colored people and some women, that'll keep them happy. And they're all right wing as well. You know, what have you got? You end up with the system you have. You know, it's only taken a couple of hundred years.
That's one of the things. That's why I get a little bit crazy every time I hear anybody talking about a liberal member of the Supreme Court.
Near the center, possibly, like left of right wing.
Yeah, I mean,
center.
I mean, the so-called biggest liberal on the court is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And she's called that because I guess she was the head of the ACLU or something once upon a time. Somebody will correct me. Lawyers are the most clannish, most conservative as a group people on earth.
Mm.
And so to suggest that there's anything liberal about much of anything in our court system is absolute hogwash. I mean, this story came out yesterday, I guess it was. We have reached a sort of dark...
One in 100.
More than one in 100. It's actually 99.1. One in 99.1.
That is incredible, because it's incredible. That's absolutely incredible. You're supposed to be the most civilized country in the world. I mean, your prison system's insane. You're farming prisons out to private companies. Now, hang on a minute.
I know, and the thing is, I would hazard a guess that probably fully at least 40% of the people in the prison system in the United States are violators of the unwritten law that some buddies of mine used to refer to as Article 99A, criminally oriented dumbass.
I'm not sure I'm aware of that one.
Well, nobody is. That's why it's a secret. But I would bet it's even higher than 40% of the people in our prisons are in our prisons because they are ignorant, poorly educated, and everything that follows from it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got such a ridiculously punitive system. I mean, you know, I've heard of guys getting 60 to 100 years for one sugar cube with some LSD on it.
Yeah, there are in this country now, there are people serving life for a joint.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane, because it does not deter crime. It's the same as the death penalty. It's been proven time and again, when you cancel the death penalty, murders go down. Because if the state does not sanction murder, it's not acceptable to murder.
And not just that, there are little pockets of intelligence. When I was up in Massachusetts at the beginning of this month, Andy, I met an amazing young man named Dwayne, and he comes from an organization called Sustainable South Bronx.
Right.
And they run, and Sustainable South Bronx runs a program that takes people who have had and who've had, you know, tough luck with the law, and redirects them via education and job opportunities into green industry.
Cool.
And have had magnificent successes with it.
Well, damn straight, because these people want something to do. You know, there's a whole bunch of studies out that show that living in poverty makes people more socially disruptive, if you like, more aggressive, more disorderly. You know, there's also studies out showing that if a woman is stressed while pregnant, i.e. living in poverty, her child will be more aggressive and more dominating and more primally driven than if she's less stressed while she's... So there's all these things...
And it's cradle to grave.
Across the board in your society, there's all these things that you're doing wrong. You're failing people in poverty. You're locking people up for no good reason. Your government is supplying drugs, nasty, nasty drugs, to parts of your society, so that they won't organize.
And lo and behold, a study comes out a couple of days ago that says the efficacy of antidepressants in actually reducing depression is almost
that's
nil.
Legal drugs. That's the legal drugs. I've been saying antidepressants.
No, but the legal drugs are the greater problem.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, crack.
So if antidepressants that do have a real effect on brain chemistry don't actually work so good on so-called depression, what do they work well on, Andy?
Well, they make people slightly more nuts. The number of suicides has increased in Britain since the antidepressant craze came in with doctors, and of course, there's no evidence linking them to suicide, except, of course, but in every single antidepressants warning thing in Europe, it says possible side effects.
Suicide.
Suicide.
Yeah.
I mean, hang on a minute. They're trying to give someone a drug to stop them being so depressed they want to kill themselves, and the side effect is they might want to kill themselves.
And I'm looking forward later this evening. Of course, it'll be way past your bedtime by then, late, but it'll run over the weekend. I'm hoping that we'll have a horn section, and horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner will be with us. I want to ask him about this depression, antidepressant study. But, Andy, you've raised another point, and what that is that it's manifested in the prison discussion or in the prison statistics, and it's manifested in what you were talking about in terms of stressful pregnancies. We're getting a lot of stuff wrong from cradle to grave, literally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we are warehousing 1% of the adult American population in prisons.
Yeah.
Now, wait, because what happens to, and I don't know what the system does in the UK or in Europe or, for that matter, in developed Asia. But in the United States, you get to be a certain age, and your kids come along and hustle you off to a nursing home.
Yeah.
Where you get warehoused there. Frankly, I think if you're going to talk about a statistic like imprisonment, it would be well to come up with a statistic for how much of our geriatric population is warehoused in a nursing home.
Yeah, and what about your kid? Your mothers are forced back to work by the time the child is, you know, off breastfeeding. It happens here in Britain as well. And so your kids are warehoused in kindergarten. And so you pay another woman minimum wage to leave her children in a worse kindergarten to look after your children. Your entire system, and the system that America is spreading, and when I say you, I'm not blaming any of you, like you all know that, but the entire system is absolutely just rancidly corrupt. I mean, you know, if I visualize the American society, everyone sees the city on a hill. Well, I see a big sinkhole, like a separating, filth-filled cesspit of just disgustingness, because there's nothing, I see nothing about American society that makes me think, good. Because all the little pockets of, like, you know, nice lawns and family life and all of that is built on the suffering of others. Like, and if it's not American citizens that are suffering, then it's the other people in the third world that are suffering.
Consider what portion of our population here, Andy, gets warehoused.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
In terms of prison, it is the lower class and the underclass.
Yeah.
And when it comes to our elderly, it's not our elderly upper class. because
well, no, they have private hospitals that deal
or they have private live-in.
Yeah, and of course they have all the top of the range drugs that stops them having the dementia problems. They can look after themselves for a lot longer.
And a lot of the diseases that beset our elderly population are directly related to
poverty of life.
Yes.
Yeah, and this is my problem in Britain too. We have a very similar system. It's not as bad. We have a better social system, and even the Conservatives are starting to advocate spending more on social welfare. But you know, if I compare Britain to Norway or Denmark, I mean, in Denmark, if you go to prison, your family can come and live with you, and you live in the prison. And
what do you go to prison for in Denmark? That's the larger question, Andy.
Offences, really serious, like you know, murder, assault, robbery. But the number of murders they have is one of the lowest in the world. You know, it's very, very clear what you have to do to make a good society. You have to run a socialist society, and by socialist I mean look at Denmark, look at Norway, look at Sweden, look at Finland, and then compare them to capitalist Russia and capitalist the United States and capitalist Britain. And Britain comes out better than you guys and the Russians by far, but we suck compared to the Danes. I mean, we suck, you know.
Well, what was that story that came out in the last couple of weeks? Quantitatively and qualitatively measured, the happiest people on Earth are Danes?
Yeah, every year, man. It's the Danes, and sometimes, occasionally, the Swedes or the Norwegians beat them to it. Sometimes the Dutch, but normally the Danes. And the Cubans are right up there, too.
And it's not, but it's not because they've got the most big screen TVs.
No. They have a much lower intensive lifestyle in terms of energy use. They pay more tax than in Britain, but not that much more. They get totally free healthcare. They have free lifetime education. I mean, literally, you know, you're 50 and you just decide you've had enough of your job and you want to retrain. Go to uni. You decide you've had enough of your job and you don't want to retrain. You just want to learn for the rest of your life. Go to uni. I mean, you know, that's it.
Will you forgive me if I say that sounds almost like fantasy land to me? Because I'm an education geek. If I had a chance, I mean, but that's the way, that's what human existence should be. Human existence should not, in the 21st century, be a function of nasty, brutish, and short. You know, that was one of your guys that came up with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I go the whole hog. I don't think that we should have to pay for water or for power. You know, that we should have enough solar cells on every home to provide our own power and provide an excess that will provide us with an income. I mean, that will encourage us to be more efficient in our usage and what we buy for our electrical equipment, because the more efficient we are, the more money we make from selling this to the businesses that require the extra power. You know, why should we have to pay for food? I don't have the right to go and grow food. I can't own and cultivate enough food, land for food on my own, because I don't have the money for it. So why should I have to pay for factory rubbish from these disgusting supermarkets where it's packaged as cheaply as possible and the farmers are ruined and the land is filled with chemicals?
So, I mean, has Great Britain gotten there now, Andy, where there's not a local butcher? I mean, I saw,
my local butcher closed 6 months ago.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I saw, my 1 hour of television a week is to watch Anthony Bourdain on No Reservations on the Travel Channel here. Right. And he did an episode on London and Edinburgh a couple of weeks ago, and went to, I forget where he was, maybe it was Soho, but he was talking with one of the locals there that was a friend of his, and he said, you know, our butcher shop closed, a butcher shop that's been here for 200 years in the same family, just closed, and it's now a handbag boutique.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for London. I mean, London is probably more unique and diverse than anywhere else, but almost every single town and city is, you know, that chain of bar, that chain of bar, that chain of bar, that chain of clothes shop, that chain of clothes shop, that chain of music video store, you know, and just, you know, there's a competitor across the street. Oh, there's a big arcade mall shopping place, call them arcades. And in there's all the usual suspects. And, you know, literally, they're all more the same. The town centres are all the same. The only place that's truly unique is Bath, because they have a city ordinance and saying everything has to be in sandstone, in the original condition buildings, and pretty much the entire city is like a grade one listed building. So, McDonald's. McDonald's said they wanted a golden M, yeah, the arches.
Mm-hmm.
And they put up that horrible yellow plastic thing. And Bath City Council came along and went, that's not golden. No, you said a golden M. You have to put a golden, as in solid gold, M.
Really?
On the roof. And they were like, we can't do that. And they went, we'll accept gold leaf. So they've got a gold M, no lights.
Forgive me, but I respect that kind of that kind of an attitude on the part
damn
of people
straight.
Who live in a place.
Damn straight. I mean, and you know, I wish it was like that everywhere. I mean, here in Cardiff, we've got Tesco's is the number one suspect over here. Walmart is doing their best with Asda to take over. Asda's like Walmart's incarnation here. But Tesco's is the number one suspect for supermarkets. And let me think, right, about 15, 20-minute walk from here is the big super mega store Tesco's that's about the size of a warehouse. About a minute and a half from here is the local Tesco's. About 2 minutes past that's another Tesco's. And about 2 minutes past that's another Tesco's. And about a minute and a half past that's one of their competitors. And then you're in the town centre where there's two Tesco's.
You know, I think that there's a certain amount of fraud perpetrated upon the American viewing public. Once upon a time on the Food Network, there was a cooking show. You know, I love to cook. I watch that kind of crap.
Me too, man. Cooking's wicked.
There was a guy. He was an import to here. His program was a guy named Jamie Oliver.
Oh, Jamie Oliver's wicked. Now he is the number one proponent of organic and free range.
And he was fun and he was joyful to watch. And there was always this footage of him going out and getting on his little scooter and riding around the corner to the open air greengrocers.
Well, he does live in a particularly nice and well-heeled part of London, and he's also got a farmhouse in Kent. So, you know, he is not representative. But he is trying to, you know, he managed to get these horrible things called turkey Twizzlers. I'm not sure what they are. I think they're like a chicken nugget thing, but with really bad, cheap turkey meat.
I live here, and then the very idea of a turkey Twizzler just sent chills down my spine, Andy.
I mean, I've never come, I'm too middle class, man. I've never even seen one. But, yeah, he got them banned from schools, which can only be good, you know, and he's promoting healthy eating and he's trying to get people to buy from farmers markets. And, you know, I've got a mate of mine who's trying to get farmers markets to come into Cardiff, into the city, and set up on Saturdays and buy your veg on the Saturday and buy meat and stuff, you know. But the problem is the council aren't really very helpful because the council are getting a lot of money from Tesco's in taxes and bribes and payoffs and holidays places. You know, the whole system's corrupt. I mean, there's a bunch of investigations being launched against Tesco's here for, you know, price fixing, bad food standards.
I guess it's a case of misery loves company, Andy. Yeah. But I'm glad to know we're not alone in this. But I'm equally glad to know that there are people leading that fight. You know, I haven't seen Jamie Oliver on TV in a while, but. He was always fun to watch, and it was fun to see him go into the open air market and sit there and you know, in the dead of winter in London, pick from 12 or 13 different kinds of chilies. Now, if you get behind that and you think, well, those chilies came from Chile because you can't grow them in London in January, you know,
well,
that's a different issue.
Melons in northeastern Scotland. Called hydroponics, Bob. It's very clever.
Ah, well, okay. All right, yeah.
So you can, yeah, literally, there's a bunch of dudes up in the eastern side of Scotland. It's the sunniest place in Britain, so they put up a load of solar panels and tried to create closed environment growing systems, and they're doing pretty well. So, yeah, there is the possibilities, man. We can produce enough food for the world.
I love the idea of... I love the idea of neighborhoods. I love the idea of, you know... Italy or Spain or France or Portugal, whatever, going around the corner and, you know, stopping in with, you know, the guy who lives in your community who does the greengrocers and the person who lives in your community and is a baker and somebody who lives in your community and is your local, boulangerie, charcuterie, you know, getting your meats and your sausages and stuff like that. It's a social occurrence.
People to even talk, Bob. I mean, let alone go to shops that don't exist anymore because of supermarkets. I mean, America's worse than Britain for this. People don't even talk to each other. They're neighbors. They, you know, the car is parked on the street outside the house. The other car is parked on what used to be the front garden. You know, the houses here, there's no side paths in the city houses. It's, you know, you want to get in the back garden, you've got to walk through the house. People come out of the house in the morning, they get in the car, they drive to work, they sit in a box all day. They get back in the little box and drive back home and get back into their box. They don't talk to each other. We've got cars everywhere. Literally, I step outside my house and there's cars. You know, you look right, you look left, just cars parked everywhere. But why do we not have tram systems that are free and efficient and constant in the cities on the main routes and have green spaces in between all the houses? So, I don't know, people come and talk to each other, have barbecues, social events, all that stuff you see in those films where the community gets together, has a barbie. That doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
But it sounds like there is an urge to make it happen, at least on some sort of a growing scale. Am I wrong in that?
No, you're not wrong. I mean, there are people trying, but, you know, the whole capitalist system is set up against us, isn't it? Because if we start having communities, groups, and people start realizing, well, hang on, she cooks amazing cakes. Why am I going to buy cakes from Tesco's when she can cook these cakes for us? I mean, we could buy our flour from the farmer that provided the meat for the barbecue we had last week with the community. And so the links become, it's against their interest to allow us to communicate, keep us separated, racism, sexism, classism.
Ism.
Biggest TV. You know, who's got the new phone? Who's got the best trainers? You know, it's to keep us all competing, because if we cooperate, they're in trouble. So stop buying stuff from the capitalist, everyone. Just stop it. Just stop buying stuff. Don't buy any more trainers. Go to a camping shop and buy a decent pair of boots. It will cost you twice as much and they'll last you 10 times as long. You're up on the deal. And probably made by someone by hand in a developed world. French make really, really good boots.
I can't remember the name, but that's another issue entirely. There are boots made in Wisconsin. And I can't remember
better.
That.
Even better for Americans, buy them at home. I mean, I buy British made.
But the problem, and the thing is, they will be made to love your feet.
Yeah, damn straight, and they'll last you 10 years or something.
A friend of mine has a pair that his father owned that are like new, and they're 70 years old.
Wicked.
And they're also $750 a pair.
The thing, you never need to buy another pair of Nikes. You know, you buy a decent pair of boots that you keep for special occasions, and you buy a pair of boots you're going to wear for the next 8 to 10 years. They don't even have to be heavy boots. You can get wonderful ankle ones that are almost like trainers now.
Oh, Agnes can tell you, if I get my hands on a pair of shoes that actually make my feet feel good, she has to take them away from me. I wear them until the soles are flopping because, you know, we don't have any cobblers anymore.
Well, no, you don't. You know, I mean, you occasionally get heel repair for women's stilettos because they just glue them back on. But this is the thing, you know, you've got to talk your partners into stopping buying that rubbish they don't need. Stopping buying those shoes. If you're going to buy shoes, go to a charity shop and buy them there. You know, because you can find just as many varieties and they're just as, you know, just as good for your feet, which is to say not at all for women. You've got to get out of the capitalist thing. We've got to stop shopping in supermarkets. We've got to stop your kids want toys. Okay, well, don't buy them from Toys R Us. Go to a small toy shop. Even though it comes from the same supplier, probably, try and buy an American toy. But even though it comes from the same supplier, you're putting money into a community.
Oh, you know, well, like I said, Spring's not cooperating, but I was in the chat room last night saying that I've got a terrible crush on a new tiller. Because I'm so eaten up with wanting my doggone garden, wanting to see something grow, something come through the earth, wanting new potatoes and green onions and fresh garden lettuce with hot pork, hot bacon fat poured over it. Ooh, my veins are hardening at the very thought of it, Andy.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
I want all that stuff, and I want it. You know, I want it for small communities. And you talk about, you know, people don't talk to each other in the grocery store. Again, that's sort of reaffirming to me that at least it's not entirely us, because I'm a real weirdo, Andy. I talk to people in the grocery store. I talk to people everywhere I go.
But I'm also careful not to do it every time. I want to listen to see what other people are saying, and people are starting to complain. I mean, I've started seeing political graffiti on the walls around here in Cardiff. And I don't know, the 80s was the last time there was political graffiti in a big way in Britain. You know, people are waking up, man. People are waking up.
Well, I know you've had computer problems and stuff, and so you may not have heard it, but I've been babbling on because it was such a shocking thing to me. I've been babbling on for over a week now about the fact that the guy who delivers the corporate bread to the grocery store up the road here said that his bosses had said for us to look for $4 a loaf bread by summer.
Bloody hell.
Now, the milk is already in excess of $4 a gallon. Mm-hmm. Gasoline is crossing $4 a gallon. when a loaf of bread goes to $4, then I think it's going to be fairly well official, Andy, that we're in the crapper.
Yeah, I've been saying for quite a while America's screwed. Try and make sure you got enough for a plane ticket over here, dude.
But it's gonna. But the thing is, it's gonna. It takes people thinking like you're talking, and like we're talking. And the thing is, what we're saying here right now in this conversation, it comes as no surprise to anybody listening to this program, either live or in podcast or whatever. And the people who are listening are saying, yes, yes, I want it, I want it. And then what we have to do is try to figure out some way to coalition and community build to make it happen.
Well, yeah, get out there and join different groups. I mean, the Green Party groups are a good one to join. I mean, you don't have to become a Green Party member.
Join your local gardening group. Join a group that's into getting together on Sundays and learning how to make old artisanal breads.
Well, yeah, just get together with as many people as you can. And once you get into those groups, start giving them ideas. I mean, if you're in a gardening group, suggest they go to the old people's home and get them to turn their garden into a vegetable patch, or a part of their garden in the old people's home, if they have one, into a vegetable patch, and get, because there's nothing like.
Well, we've got a plan or a program or whatever that I've participated in the past for people who grow gardens, and it's called Plant a Row for the Hungry, and you just dedicate a certain portion of your garden.
Well, no, what I'm talking about is getting the people who are in those institutions into doing stuff again. Get involved with your local prison. If you've got no criminal record and you're clean and they can't touch you for anything, go to your local prison and suggest they start growing food, and you'll help them. You know, just start doing these things, and it will start to accelerate. You know what I mean? But you have to just come. I can't come up with all the ideas. People have to come up with the ideas and join groups, infiltrate them,
and feel good about it. Good about it. Know that know that you're rebuilding a future. Because the future, it's not just the United States. The future that the so-called first world is facing in many instances is a grim one.
Yeah.
As we face the combined effects of things like global warming and peak oil and energy shortages, if people like us don't start coming up with these ideas.
Well, unfortunately for the rest of the world, Bob, it does kind of hinge on you. Because if the United States isn't, if Bush et al. Continues, If that philosophy continues, then the Chinese will not do anything, and the Indians will not do anything, and we'll be screwed by the end of the century. And there's no point in me and Hazel having children, because that's it, it's over. So we do have to do stuff, but unfortunately it's down to you guys in the States. I mean, we can do so much. You know, Europe can be the greenest and most efficient and effective place in the world, and we can be exporting green technology.
But I think
it won't happen if we do, though, Bob.
I think you undersell your impact, Andy, because...
No, we have a huge impact. I understand our impact all too well, Bob. That's what I mean. If Europe does it alone, if the United States has not changed, if you lot fail, and Bush et al.'s corporatist greed goes on, then Europe will do it alone, and we will come up with the green technology, and we will come up with the perfect fusion, because we're already developing fusion in France, and we'll come up with the things we need to solve these immediate problems, and probably create more problems, but we'll solve them too. But unfortunately, the capitalists in the United States will try and destroy the entire world to stop us from doing that.
I know, but we've got... But we've got...
That's why you lot are so essential, because you're the only people who can stop this. You've got to take control of the United States government. With the United States government and Europe, the capitalists can be brought under control. Until the capitalists are brought under control, we're all screwed. End of story.
Well, I agree with all of that, but what I was getting at, though, Andy, is that one of the things that we constantly hear is that, that won't work, that'll destroy the economy, yada, 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 yada.
Well, that's all rubbish. I mean,
it is rubbish, but we've got to have concrete examples to point to and say, well, look, they're not starving in the streets in Cologne, and they're not rioting in Marseille, and it looks like things are going fairly well with forward-thinking change in Cardiff.
Well, I see your point, but the problem with that is the examples are already there. I mean, California has solar power plants, like solar furnace plants.
Oh, yes.
Very efficient. You know, the examples are there. The problem is the capitalists will not let people know about them, and they won't let people know about the European examples. They'll try and destroy them.
Well, there's a larger dynamic, or perhaps smaller, at work here as well, Andy, and that is this. the places where we are having problems making any headway are, oh Lord, you're right about California. You're right about the reduction in electricity consumption. There's progress being made in this country, but we've got to change hearts and minds in places like Alabama and Tennessee and the Carolinas, places that are so-called Republican strongholds.
That's where the unity ideas come in so usefully, because if a couple of people dotted around in Alabama listen to this conversation and go out and join a gardening group and manage to get the people in the gardening group to realize, well, maybe we should start to include the school and include the old people's home and include the hospital.
And from a political standpoint, the reason that this matters is that there is a school of thought, and I'm talking about Democratic Party politics, okay? Mm-hmm. There's a school of thought that says, well, the deep south of America is beyond the pale, and the Democrats aren't really going to campaign there, and we're not going to try to change hearts and minds there.
Yes,
we're just going to try to win with a handful of big states. The other side of that debate...
They're irrelevant.
Right,
they're scumbags that are designing things for you to lose. You've got to move around them. You've got to move around them. They're scum, they're capitalists, they've foisted these two candidates on you, and you've got to put up with one or the other. So select Barack Obama because he's the lesser of two evils when it comes to the Democratic choices. And then you've got to take control of the Democratic Party away from these people.
What I'm getting at, because the 50 state strategy that was enunciated by Howard Dean says we're not going to concede any state, no matter how decidedly Republican it's been.
DLC, and start telling everyone, every Democrat put it on the websites, put it on the Huffington Post, put it on every comment thing everywhere. Do not support any DLC candidate after the next presidential election. From then on, all DLC candidates are out, and you campaign against them. And there will be a primary next time those people's seats come up. And all the people who are in the DLC offices start harassment campaigns, not like danger harassment, but just have people who've got a day off phone the DLC office all day and just tie up their lines and make things as awkward as possible for them and just, disrupt their plans and constantly harass them with emails and constantly send them letters. Turn up at their offices. If you live near any of their offices, and just sit outside their offices with the signs saying DLC, you're scum and you work for the Republicans. You've got to do this, but obviously it's going to have to happen after the next election. But this is what has to kick in, because otherwise the DLC will run it. They'll run their candidates for the next 4 years. They'll screw up. The Republicans will be back in for 8 years, and we're all screwed. Because that's the plan. Leave the war to the Democrat. Democrat ran away. Republican back in. Attack Iran or another country.
I know.
They'll find oil somewhere.
That's what it's all about, isn't it?
But it is down to Americans. I'm sorry, we can do a load, and we are doing a load in Europe. But we're well ahead of you on the socialism thing. You guys do have to play catch up. It's hard work. Sorry, and it's down to the few of you who are awake. Sorry about that. That's even tougher. But rest assured, at least a lot of you are now awake compared to, when we first started talking, when there were just a few.
Yeah, very true.
But yes, I'm going to have to go because I've been monopolizing you. And it's
No. You don't do it very much, and I love our little Friday night conversations. Andy, have yourself a wonderful weekend, and give our best to Hazel.
I sent you some music. You've got to check your email account out. Is that working yet?
No, it's not, sadly. BobKincaid@gmail.com is what I'm using these days.
I'll try and send him there.
Okay. Thanks, Andy.
Cool, take care, mate.
Bye now.
Love to the family.
You too. Bye. I love the brainstorming that we do. Because this, sometimes it's not just a sit and gripe session. It's actually looking toward a realistic future here. Let's see if I got all six lines blinking. You're a busy signal. Yeah, so are you. You quit. Hold on here. Ah, that looks like somebody. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. I was just sitting here tonight watching what passes for media in our country. I was just watching all this tonight, and it just kind of hit me a couple different things. One is, have you noticed that on all of our talking head shows, can you find me a pundit who supports Hillary Clinton? I mean, one.
No, I don't think they're allowed.
That's what I mean. And the people who do support her right now, like you said, they're not allowed on TV. But it was just amazing to me. I was watching this thing tonight, this flap over this commercial she's running now, this new one. And it just hit me all of a sudden that, you know, that all of a sudden here they were. Well, Obama responds and complains about, whatever it is they want to say, they've been saying this. And I'm sitting there going, you know what? I just imagine reverse it. If Obama had come out with an ad and Hillary had come on and complained about it, could you imagine how many times you would have heard the word wine?
Oh, every other word.
That's what I mean. You know, that's all.
And see, the thing that's driving me nuts though is that there's a larger thing operating here, Luke. There's a bigger thing at work because. This isn't, and I hope the people who are staunchly behind Obama, and if he's the nominee, I'm going to be one of those people. But I hope that the people who are staunchly behind Obama understand that this isn't about liking him, the media liking him better than Hillary. It is about trying to set up McCain for the one-shot punch-out, making McCain the president.
Well, it's like we've said, I've told you before. I said I'm not going to take a whole lot of joy in it in one respect, but it is going to be so interesting to watch the whiplash when they turn 180 degrees on the Obama people, and these people who for the last 6 months have been essentially saying that he can do no wrong will not be able to find a thing he's doing right, and it's just going to be so interesting to just see the look in the Obama people's faces when the media stands up and essentially slaps them in the mouth.
Well, I hope for the sake of this country that they aren't surprised. I hope somebody I know his upper level management team is not a bunch of kumbaya singing Sunday schoolers. I mean, they come out of old school Chicago politics, and they know it's bare knuckled and bloody. But for the people who are
but see that's the problem is that's what he's been selling is that, you know, once I get the nomination, the Republicans are, of course, are going to play fair, play nice. You know, that's essentially what they've been saying. You know, is that once we're united behind Obama, everything will just work out. And I think some people are just in for a rude awakening.
Well, Luke, I have a hard time believing that there are that many Pollyannas after 8 years of George Bush and two Karl Rove-run campaigns.
Right now, so many of them are, you know, they're on the train ride, and right now they can't see anything but. You know, if you say, you know, say that you're having, you know, watch out for this, they're going like, oh, you're just a defeatist. You know, you want us to lose before we even think about it. So we're not even going to think about that. Because I've heard some of them talk, and I mean, it's essentially like, you know, we aren't going to believe anything that we don't believe. If you want to say we're wrong about something, well, of course you're wrong. Because we can't be wrong about anything. And the one other thing about the media that I tell you that most people, and I'm sorry about this, but most people are forgetting. And anybody that says, you know, the media is being fair, just remember one thing, especially more than anything else. Just remember, these are the same morons that 8 years ago told us George W. Bush was a better person than Al Gore.
Oh, and that Al Gore was a serial liar.
And just remember,
pathological.
Yeah, and just everybody try to remember right after the election and even after 2001. Just remember, folks, how many of these people lost their jobs because they screwed over America? That answer would be not very many. You know, and it's one of those things where the one I got to recently, I got an argument with somebody about, we were talking about the wiretapping thing. And they said, well, they said 9/11, one of my friends said 9/11 changed everything. And I said, okay, let's say everything past 9/11 out off the window. I just want to see the guys indicted who were bugging people before 9/11. said, he said, who was that? And I said, all the same ones. Because most people don't bring it up when they talk about this is the fact that on this whole wiretapping thing, the Bush administration started this like in March of 2001. You know, 6 months before 9/11.
Yes.
When they want to stand up and cry, oh, 9/11 changed everything. It's like, no, it didn't. And, you know, and like I say, you all were already doing this at 9/11. So unless you want to claim you knew 9/11 was coming, that's not a defense.
No, it's not. And, you know, you remember back when Cheney and the Bush administration all started taking Cipro 2 weeks before the anthrax attacks?
It's amazing how all these nice little coincidences just seem to pop up at the same time.
Were you a little taken aback by the so-called ricin attack today?
I'm sitting there going, well, apparently this guy got, apparently it's somebody moving it, I'm assuming. Apparently it got exposed to it apparently 2 weeks ago, and they're just finding it now. You know, apparently this guy got sick 2 weeks ago. He was at this hotel, and apparently, I don't know why, apparently 2 weeks later, now they're looking through his room.
These are stories that are being reported by the so-called professional media,
yeah.
So God only knows what the real facts are.
True.
But there was
that's what we're hearing from them right now, so that's all we can go with, unfortunately. And you're sitting there going, and they're saying it's pure ricin, and you're sitting there going, well, A, what's somebody doing with it? And the way that it bugs me so much right now is all of a sudden you hear them all come and go, it's not terrorism, which makes me think either A, this guy works for the government. He's moving it around.
It's the same thing with the weaponized weapons-grade anthrax.
Yeah.
It's not something that you just cook up in the... It's not meth, okay? You can't cook it in the bathtub.
Well, you can, but it's not like not what they're finding. You know what I mean? You can make it, but it'd be a really low grade and all this. What they're saying they're finding is essentially laboratory grade. And it's just amazing. Like I say, that this stuff is normally kept, you know, under lock and key. They keep track of it. But amazingly enough, apparently some of it's walked off. Or apparently it may not have walked off. It may just actually be being moved by somebody who they didn't want anybody to know they were moving it. Or who knows? We still don't know what the real answer is. You know, we can come up with a dozen scenarios as to what this is doing there. It just amazes me that the first thing they're out there running going, this isn't a terrorism attack. It's like, okay, then you better be able to explain what it is right now.
Okay, paranoid tinfoil helmet moment, Luke. You know why it's not a terrorism attack? Because it's domestic. And if it's domestic, you know what that means. It's being perpetrated by a right-winger.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we do know that, you know, the anthrax attack was perpetrated by someone who had access to American weapons-grade anthrax.
And we see
there aren't a lot of liberals with that access.
Well, like I say, and look at the targets. You send it to Tom Brokaw. You send it to Tom Daschle. You send it to who's the third? My mind's going by. Was it Rockefeller?
Daschle. No, it wasn't Rocky.
It was somebody else. That because you remember it was the two people that had access, who had dominion over the Patriot Act running through, and I can't think of who the other person was all of a sudden. I'm sorry about that, but amazingly enough, it was just the people who could have stopped the Patriot Act in its tracks, and that's the people who got those magic letters.
Yeah, Feingold.
Just remember the one down in. What was it, the one down at the Enquirer or whatever, that apparently was just sort of a fluke.
Or a trial run.
Yeah. So, like I say, just look at the targeting. It's like amazingly that nobody got sent any of it at the Pentagon. Nobody got sent any of it at the White House. You know. Because you know good and well, if they had to send a letter there, George would have come out there waving it up above his head, essentially. say, look what we got.
I know.
So, but you know what I mean? It's just amazing to me right now, sitting back and watching the press, the media, what was it somebody called it the other day? Oh, shoot. Well, I guess what we call it the corporate media. You know, they're just running like a pack of animals. You know, I love the thing the other day when the Clinton group was there talking to apparently Broder and some of these others and said, we didn't realize you all now were taking your job assignments from Matt Drudge.
But when you get right down to it, that's what's going on, Luke.
Oh yeah.
Matt Drudge is the investigative arm of the so-called professional media.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's like we always said, you know, he throws out 100 things, and one of them just happens to be right just out of dumb luck.
Well, even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's amazing to see these people are all of a sudden, you know, it was funny and pathetic to see people like Broder and some of these others essentially have to sit there and defend Matt Drudge.
Because they've turned into Matt Drudge.
Yeah. Well, they just turned into they're not even that good. They're under him on the food chain.
Yeah, the Washington Post, the Weekly World News, you know. The Weekly World News quit printing a print edition because it couldn't compete with the professional corporate media anymore.
Yeah. They said our stuff doesn't even sound crazy compared to them now.
No, look, you know, I remember a remark one, I forget who the comedian was who made it, Luke, but back during the George H.W. Bush presidency, you had, Dan Quayle.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember some comedian saying that he was getting out of the Dan Quayle joke business because he said he was told a Dan Quayle joke off the cuff by his barber the last time he was in for a haircut, and he said, when the amateurs are out there doing the comedy, I can't compete anymore.
Well, and the thing of it is,
same working paradigm for what we have going on with the difference between tabloid journalism and so-called legitimate journalism now. Carolyn pointed this out early in the program, when Maureen Dowd got called on the carpet.
Oh.
This letter to the editor points out some things about the media that Maureen Dowd's last column, which excoriated Hillary for saying that she wasn't getting equal treatment by the media, Maureen Dowd used the following words to describe Senator Clinton: desperate, primal scream, clanging, churlish, discombobulated, gloomy, flipping, begrudging, whining, experience, pea green with envy, sibyl, cascading, dizzying, unsettling, struggling, tartly, peevishly, pointlessly, and sarcasm, all in one column. In the same column, she used for Senator Obama the following words: golden child, sunny, consistency, bedazzling, confidence, excitement, exceptionally easy in his skin. And the writer to the letter to the editor said, if Ms. Dowd wants to make the point that she doesn't like Senator Clinton, then she's made it. If she wants to make the point that the press treats Mrs. Clinton fairly, contrary to what the senator may believe, then this column, alas, has made Senator Clinton's point.
Well, I mean, it's like I said, you know, you can sit there and, like, say, if any of you can stomach it, much more power to you. But like I say, sit one night and watch the Chris Matthews show, the Hardball. And, I mean, it's an hour of we hate Hillary. He's going to bring on people, and if they don't agree with him, he's going to shout them down. But that's what that whole hour is to be pushing, is we hate Hillary. And, I mean, that's the entire theory behind it. You know, it's like I said, the thing right now with the media is you've got two options to get on cable or network news.
Yeah.
You either got to be a Hillary hater or you have to be an Obama loyalist. That's your two choices.
Or a McCain-Turian.
Yeah, well, but I mean on the Democratic side.
I still don't know what the Republicans are going to do because they did spend 16 years building this anti-Hillary machine. I know I've said that a couple of times during this program.
Well, it's like I said, one of the best things I'm going to absolutely sit and watch, and I'll watch this, and I'll have popcorn when I do it, is the day, and like I say, I think the way it's going now, there's no doubt Obama's going to be the candidate, no matter what it takes. They're going to make him the candidate. But it's going to be watching Chris Matthews try to tell Obama and McCain at the exact same time that he loves them both. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, but see, now he loves McCain more because McCain makes a furrow in his pants.
But you know what I mean? I read somebody wrote this that it's going to be interesting to see when the two media darlings of the last last 3 or 4 years have to face each other is to watch the media see them go side to side to see how, like I say, to see who they can say they love or hate more. Because Janus. It's going to be two-faced because they're going to be saying the same thing out of both sides of their mouths. You know, I love you. One will hear McCain, one will hear Obama. It just depends which side of, I guess what you'll probably do is they'll probably set it up with a stereo. If you're listening to the left speaker, you hear I love Obama. If you listen to the right speaker, you hear I love McCain.
I know.
Because some of these people, it is, like I say, it's going to be like watching them play Twister. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And that's part of it.
Welcome to Pretzelville. Hey, Luke, I got to roll on. Have a great weekend.
Bye, you too.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye now. All right. How many of these blinking lights are actually people? That's what we have to find out. You're not. Ah, you are. Hi, who
evening,
I got?
Bob.
Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, I was just going to say one thing about the whole Hillary thing. When people talk about why is it that a lot of people don't like her, and I've always not liked her, and I'll just tell you why. It seems to me when you have someone who's really transparent at talking at you instead of to you, it just becomes a bit annoying and grating, and after a while it's just like, and I have this thing conversations with people. It is that symptom that she suffers from.
Look, it wouldn't be the first time in American politics that people were put off by professional broadcaster, by the means by which the message is communicated.
Oh, I know.
Adlai Stevenson was a genius. Adlai Stevenson was as dull as dishwater, and that paved the way for Dwight Eisenhower. Of course, some of these things, I understand what you're saying, David.
Yeah.
But some of these things have been advanced for a long time, and it takes on the patina, if you will, of the big lie. Because Hillary Clinton has been described as a shrieking virago by the right wing for 16 years. And as a consequence of that, having been repeated so many times, that meme takes on a life of its own. So that when you hear her, you are already predisposed to hear her as a shrieking virago. Now, to me, I'm a born and raised Southerner, okay,
yeah.
And I'm not trying, and I'm not putting down anybody who calls this program at all ever for their dialect. I love the various dialects of this nation, but some are more pleasing to my ear than others. And frankly, Hillary Clinton has a kind of a nasally sort of upper Midwestern twangy thing going on that doesn't for me. But by the same token, I'm not going to judge her or her policies or her politics on how her voice sounds to me.
I'm not really talking about her voice. I was telling you about how she relates to other people in terms of just talking, like I said, talking to them instead of at them. If you're not good at it, you're not good at it. And unfortunately, she hasn't been good at it for a while. That's basically what I'm saying when it comes to that. And I do a poll and I ask people what is it that really annoyed them about Hillary. And it seems to me that if you have that transparency to you that's really like that, and it's unfortunate that she's a Democrat, it's just going to make a lot of people turn the other way.
I understand that. And again, look, it's a combination of that. It's a combination of the right wing didn't hate Hillary for Hillary's ideas, David. The right wing hated Hillary primarily because she was a strong woman. And from the anti-choice movement to the white power structure of the Republican Party, a strong woman is absolutely terrifying. I mean, and that's why you see phrases, and I'm not saying these as my own words, but you see phrases about Hillary used in the right wing, such as castrating bitch and ball busting bitch, and you've got Rush Limbaugh talking about her testicle lockbox, and you've got Chris Matthews talking about Hillary's male backers singing in her castrati choir. It is entirely sexualized, David, and that is at its core.
I'm not disregarding that at all. What I'm saying is that Hillary has earned a lot or most of what is coming at her in terms of just the way she handled herself. And see, the problem is once you have someone like that who builds up a reputation and builds up this, and you still can't relate to the people around you, and you still have to, I've seen her in interviews, and it's just her mannerisms, and me and my dad, we say the same thing. It's like, why are you laughing at every single other thing? See, those little things, Bob, they add up after a while. And to me, some people can get away with it, and some politicians can't. She's just one of them who can't.
Well, I think one of the things that she competes against, whether anybody wants to talk about it or not, is not so much Barack Obama, but her husband. Because the magic of Bill Clinton was his personable affability. That drove the right wing crazy because people could identify with him. And truly, if there was ever a president you felt like you could sit down and drink a beer with, it was Bill Clinton. Not George W. Bush, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton would sit down and hammer back a six-pack with you and explain to you in a way that you could understand why why certain things in the world were the way they were, because he's a brilliant man. He's a flipping genius.
George would steal your beer.
George would steal your beer. George is the kind of guy that would sneak in and saran wrap the toilet seat in the fraternity house on a Friday night.
Did you happen to read that Bob Geldof piece?
No.
It's a really interesting piece, and it really points to me toward Bob Geldof's psyche, calling him a man of honor, and then at the same time, the conversation he's having on this plane. Geldof gets sucked in so easily, and it makes me wonder how much of his personality is when he played Sid Barrett in The Wall.
That it's interesting you should say that, because I've watched that film a million times and I wondered the same thing, because he there wasn't much dialogue to it.
He took offense when a reporter asked, well, if this is all about the world and it's about a multicultural event, why are there so few black acts? And I remember listening to that interview, and he'd go on this tirade and he wouldn't really explain why. And you know, when you read this interview, it's really interesting, because first of all, it's not an interview, because I don't think he was allowed a pen, and maybe he was just allowed to do it from memory, like so many, like the way they weren't able to when the hearings. You can't have, if you have a deposition or anything, you gotta take a pen and pencil with you, no recorders or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think maybe he was taking notes, but it's really interesting in terms of how Bush reacts to certain questions that Geldof asks. It's like it's like two pages or something. But
shoot me that link, would you, David?
Yeah, I'll send you that link. But I mean, one thing that really occurs to me reading that piece is when you see someone like that, and when they try to tell you what it is they think they're trying to compensate for being in that time on Air Force One. And that's such a powerful thing that people don't really, you know, they don't really think about. Like, you have a powerful, an activist figure like Geldof or what have you, and he's talking to the president. There is no room for basically, as the right wing would say, bashing. So I understand in some respects, but a lot of the things I was just like, I was thinking like, does this guy really believe what this leader is telling him? I mean, there were points where he called him.
Oh, look, yeah, look, I had the same feelings when Bono met with Jesse Helms. See, I did, gotcha.
Yeah, you know, it's the same thing I had when he met with the president, too. And to me, it is this, I don't care what anyone says, Bob, it's a disease. Celebrity culture is a riddled disease that you cannot, there will be no redeeming factors to this. And the fact that people, you know, here's an interesting thing about it, is like, let's take a look at someone like Beyonce Knowles, okay?
Oh, okay.
All right, Beyonce has a song called Upgrade. And what is Upgrade about? Upgrade is about upgrading all your gear, upgrading everything about a man, upgrading about everything in his vicinity, just more and more and more and more and more. And then you continue on with their songs, and it's the same type of pattern. And to me, the whole line in the pop industry, it's all injected now, everything. So it's almost just like a cathode ray assembly line.
Yeah.
And you just
I've got to hit a couple more buttons here, David, but let me leave you with something to ponder, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
When Hillary Clinton announced her campaign for the presidency, she was really caught between the devil and the deep blue sea.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the one hand, what a lot of people who are progressive and forward-thinking would want from the first female president of the United States is somebody who might bring, for the first time in history, a feminine mindset to the office. Because, after all, you know, take a look at what, you know, 43 white guys have done. A lot of that's not such a stunning record. So there's that. You want to see what a real, I mean, if there's a difference between the sexes, you want to see what the difference is. On the other hand, because we live in the so-called national security state, she has to prove, and there was an old Hillary joke that went around, why does Hillary never wear a short skirt? Because she doesn't want anybody to see her balls. Okay? All kinds of, you know, and that was, you know, that was started and generated in the right wing. Another right wing joke, what they're offering a Hillary Clinton, they're offering a Hillary Clinton special at KFC. Do you know what it is? And the answer was two left wings and a small breast, or two small breasts and a left wing.
Yeah.
Again, the misogyny of the right wing rising to the so. I would say that beyond a shadow of a doubt, hers has probably been the most difficult presidential campaign ever waged in this country because she has from the outset been damned if she did and damned if she didn't, because she had to show that she was every bit as tough and bloodthirsty as the boys,
right,
at the same time as showing that she was tender and maternal, like otherwise misogynistic America expects of the best of its women.
Right.
So, well, you know, chew on that a little bit. Tell me what you think.
I see what you're saying, and I just want to say that I can safely say that I never she never gauged at me, and I never really liked her to begin with.
No, I can understand that. I can understand that. In all fairness, David, There's a boatload of people who feel that way if the polls and the statistics are to be believed, but I have to wonder how people get there. Because I have never had this deep-seated, abiding distaste for Hillary Clinton. I have had and I do have considerable questions about her policy positions.
Right.
But none of it has to do with whether with what kind of internal or external plumbing she has.
Mm.
And she didn't really bother me during her husband's 8 years in office.
I think a lot of it has to do, before you go, with the supper table dynamics. You hear it from your family and it gets embedded in your head.
Well, there you go.
And I think,
or you turn it on the radio and you hear it, or you turn on the TV and you hear it, or you open a magazine and you see it. It's
right.
Hillary hate has been pervasive in this nation. I'm not kidding. This is my fourth reference to it during the program. I'm not
right.
kidding that there is a 16-year-old fully formed industry built for the sole purpose of destroying her should she have the unmitigated temerity to think that she could ever be president of the United States of America, because women's ain't allowed to be that here.
I agree with you on that one.
David, I'm going to roll along. Have a great weekend, all right?
All right, later.
Take care.
Bye.
Do you take issue with that? I mean, look, this nation has a profound racist streak to it, and by God, running right parallel to it in true Euclidean geometric form is a real broad misogynistic streak. Men, a lot of them, are scared teetotally to damn death of a woman that they think might be smarter than they are. I don't get it. I don't get it. Let's try again. Let's see. Hi, who have I got?
Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
How you doing? First of all, for all those, you know, I've never had anything personal against Hillary. I think, you know, I was proud to vote for her as my senator when I was living here years ago and returned. And if she runs for New York again, that is, if she doesn't become president, but if she wants to, I'll probably vote for her as a returning New Yorker. On that note, whatever personality quirks, and I can see that in her to a certain degree, but after what she's been through, after what the media has put her through, don't you think she can become a bit hardened?
Well, that's what she's up against.
Yeah, I would be hardened too.
Sure.
Any human being would. You know, I think she's really have received a bad rap over the years. You know, they've invaded into this poor woman's life on a level that, you know, it's like, it's undescribable, you know.
Yeah, I do know.
Yeah, and the only person I can think they're getting ready to cook up and roast them is Barack Obama.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Because they're going to find every little... You know, you think what they did to Harold Ford in Tennessee was bad? You ain't seen nothing yet. It's already starting with the turbans and the Barack Hussein Obama with that little redneck Jack... What's his name, from Georgia?
Oh, Jack Kingston?
Yeah.
He wasn't wearing his pledge pin.
Yeah, you know, it's like he's the one who was whining about how, you know, he has to work a 5-day work week in Washington when he has to... Well, quit your job, Jack.
Yeah, no kidding. Lots of people make those kind of choices in America.
Yeah, you know. It's like, welcome to the real world, Jack. You have to work a 5-day week.
Because there's a hell of a lot of people out there working 14-day weeks.
Exactly. You know, it just, and I bet you his county is one of those, well, he is a right-to-work state. I'm not even betting he is in one of those right-to-work states.
Yeah, he's a Georgian.
Yeah, you know. It's like his little racist comment, Barack Hussein Obama. You know, if you ever talk about a poster boy for the Republican Party, and I think he's setting himself up to be like a Dan Quayle and become VP.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, he's trying to rise up within the party, so he toasts the party line. But going back to what our friend across the pond was talking about.
Yeah, Andy.
Yeah, I wanted to really point it and start our real conversation on, you know, people often ask, why were the German people so easy to convince during World War II that the Jews were bad and for all their problems? And it's often asked, why did it happen? The German people were broke and they were in recession.
And when you're in that kind of trouble, if you can find a scapegoat, by God, you'll use it.
Not only that, if you can find a job, you'll do it, any job.
Yeah.
Okay, the Nazi Party offered jobs.
Yeah.
They got with the defense contractors like Bosch and Mercedes-Benz and Audi and Porsche, all these famous brands that exist today, to build the German war machine.
Krupps.
Krupps, another one, yeah.
Brown.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know. And
Volkswagen.
Well, Volkswagen was a product of the Third Reich.
Yeah.
You're absolutely correct. And people will do things for when a job is, look, desperate people do desperate things.
Exactly.
But by the same token, let's also be honest that there was the Third Reich capitalized on a long-standing anti-Semitic tradition in Europe that exists to this day.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's the same thing here. America, you know, goes on the racism of America, too. But I'm willing to bet you any amount of money, if things got really bad enough, the same thing would happen.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Kevin, let me hit a couple more before we go. Everybody's done the same thing. We're all stacked up at the end.
Okay, no problem.
Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, brother.
Later now. Bye. Okay. Hi, who have I got?
Oh, you've got Michelle.
Hey, Michelle.
Well, I'll be quick because I think Richard's on hold, too.
I got six people on hold.
My phone's beeping and saying it's going to die.
Oh, no. Talk fast. Auctioneer time.
Okay, so do you get to hear me, or can you hear me?
I got you loud and clear, 5x5.
Okay. All right, well, I just wanted to say that I agree with you about the propaganda about Hillary being female and, you know, a woman that hides her balls under her skirt. Well, damn it, sometimes women have to grab their balls, you know, in this society. But, you know, it's sad that none of us know who to trust. You know what I'm saying? And I think
or maybe more sad that we feel like there isn't anyone to trust politically.
Right. Exactly. And the problem is that I think we all kind of need to come to the realization that this just didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen from Nixon. It, you know, the robber barons did a pretty good job, you know, making sure they could set things up again. But I think that, you know, the problem is that it ain't going to be answered by not voting for her or voting for some person that comes in at the last minute, you know, and stirs things up. I mean, if you really want change, then you have to have the population behind you. You have to have the masses. That ain't going to happen until they're motivated. And how are they motivated? Well, when hard times hit. And, you know, until then, you have to realize that they're playing a game of survival of the fittest.
And please understand that motivation only lasts a little bit, Michelle, because the 1920s should have ended the Republican Party forever.
Oh, exactly.
And by 1952, there's a Republican president.
Well, they knew. That's why we got the New Deal. Because they knew there was going to be an uprising. They knew there was going to be a revolt of the people. That's why we got the New Deal. Neither the Democrats or the Republicans wanted that crap to happen. That was to pacify the people. The people were they were there. They were gonna take over, but they pacified us. You know, so I mean, not that the New Deal wasn't a good deal for a minute, but you know what I'm saying?
No, I do. I do completely.
Well, I'm gonna let you get to one more call if you can.
I will try.
Okay, I love you guys. You got my note?
Yes, I did. Thank you so very much.
Okay, bye, kiddo.
All right, bye. Our pal Michelle, the gal from Cal. You know, you guys don't make it easy. just a couple minutes left, and let's see who we got here. Hi, who we got?
Is this me?
That would be you. Hey, Kate.
Hello, hello, hello. Very briefly, I just, the thing about Las Vegas today just kind of vindicates my, I mean, I feel vindicated. There's going to be some kind of event, and it's getting, the events are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I'm still looking for the Constitution to be suspended because they're not going to let no black man up Pennsylvania Avenue, whoever they are, and this whole groundswell is so frightening because it's happening too fast. It's way too fast. And it scares me. I don't know. I don't understand. And when I heard early today, when I heard that ad with the phone ringing 6 times, which means it probably rolled over to answering machines, not answered by 6 rings. I'm old enough to remember the Daisy and the Mushroom Cloud.
Yeah.
The Willie Horton ad, and they're going to burn him bad. He's going to get dropped. I'm telling you, I'm just working on intuition. And
when the Secret Service stands down in Birmingham and Dallas, like I said, trouble coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope, never mind the Secret Service, I hope his own people are sharp enough to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hope I also hope he gets the quality body armor. I recommend the dragon skin. Not the crap that was manufactured by the guy who threw the $10 million bat mitzvah party for his daughter.
Right, right. Well, I don't know. It's getting, Vegas is just a preview of things to come, and it's getting bigger and bigger, and the people behind the curtain are working really, really hard, and it's getting really nasty. So, I mean, we know it's going to be nasty, but I just think that, the brother's not going to march up Pennsylvania Avenue, and it is just so frightening, and I'm not sure whether they're trying to get McCain in or they're trying to get Hillary or...
No, it's McCain. It's McCain, because McCain is George W. Bush's get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, there's still 2 or 3 minutes left. I guess I'll just hang up. And
yeah, I got to get out of here, and because you're the person who usually does this kind of thing, it's the end of February. We almost made it to our goal.
And nobody has any money, but Obama, people can donate $5 million in what, a month or a week or a day or some crap? Don't tell me there's no money. Oh, God, that makes me mad.
I understand.
No.
I'm feeling good. February was a very short month, and we almost made the goal.
Yeah, but we're starting in September, we're still running in the red.
Oh yeah,
Excuse me.
Yeah,
Tell me there's no money. I hate hearing that. There is money. It's just not, the priorities are wrong. And when people think when this mic goes cold, we've got any place to talk, you're full of crap. So I'm just I'm done for the night. I'm out of here.
All righty. Later, Kate.
Bye.
Bye. My apologies to lines 1 through 5. Well, I mean, you know, not 1 through 5, but you know what I mean. The 5 lines that are still blinking, I apologize to. We'll hit it again Monday, okay? You be here, I'll be here. On his way, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, with Strictly Confidential. We're also very grateful to Peter because he's our IT professional. Also, many thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, who's already smack dab in the middle of his weekend. Many thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He makes all the streams and archives do what streams and archives are, by Jove, supposed to do. Thanks
to the hard-working, dedicated members of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Be a part of Coal River Mountain Watch. Be part of the solution. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
America and good morning world. Welcome, welcome indeed to book chapter and verse 121 of Strictly Confidential, otherwise referred to as this crazy little thing called love. I am Peter Godbold and welcome indeed. This is the LGBT version and it's exclusively on the listener supported Head On Radio Network. We are also supported by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's CRMW.net, and I encourage you to stop by CRMW.net.